Hey, friend. Welcome to episode 29 of the Jock and Nerd podcast. Joining us today on the show is independent comic book creator Mark Allen Fishman from Unshaven Comics, based here in Chicago. They've just started an awesome Kickstarter for the Samronauts, and he's going to give us all the scoop. Mark, what's the battle cry?
Samronauts are go.
It's the Jock and Nerd podcast with your hosts, Anthony and Imran.
Jock and Nerd!
Yes, yes, we're back again.
Welcome to the Jock and Nerd podcast, episode 29. Another great guest joining us in the studio. My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
And he's the nerd.
And joining us is our very first returning guest, Mark Fishman from Unshaven Comics. Thanks for coming by, Mark.
Thanks for having me. Do I give you the check now or later?
You know, you could just drop it off with the secretary. That's my dog, Joplin. She'll take all the checks on the way out. But
actually, do you consider Rug Boy a returning guest?
No. Rug Boy is on payroll.
Oh, he's on payroll.
Rug Boy is staffed. Okay. Are you familiar with the Rug Boy? Have you heard any of those episodes?
They're in the can. How about that way?
Okay. We have a lot of content. Yeah. Returning listeners, thanks for listening. New listener, if you're just joining us for the first time, God bless you. And like we just said, we have a lot of content for everyone. We are your, what's the tagline, Anthony? We are your
comic book curators.
We are your superhero TV and comic book curators.
There we go.
I'm trying to get to the I think I broke my mouse. Oh, there we go. There it fell.
You dropping something is not like you always drop things.
And that's not the first thing.
That's
I'm
not the first
draw.
Thing you dropped. You probably will drop something during this episode.
I dropped my e-cig at least 3 times.
How many times have you dropped your cell phone in between my car seat?
Oh, every time I'm in your car.
Right?
Goddamn car.
Are you going to like drop the bass though?
I'm going to drop the beats. I'm going to let the beat drop. Oh, shit.
Wow. That might be my goal, actually, on the way here. I started on your Ant-Man episode.
Excellent. That's a good one.
It is. And my hope is that by the end of this episode, I get you guys to use the oh shit and Jock and Nerd buttons more than any time.
It should be
a game.
Oh, boy. And then, listener, we're going to have to turn it into a drinking game. So for this episode, every time you hear this.
Oh, shit.
Take a drink. You hear this.
Jock and Nerd.
You got to take 2 drinks or a shot. How's that? Good
shot.
Rules?
Yeah.
Hard liquor?
Hard liquor, yeah.
You don't have hard liquors, take a big swig for that one.
The point is to not make it through the episode alive.
No.
We could give you alcohol poisoning by the end. No, I don't. That's not fun. I've had that.
Alcohol is not fun. It's fun,
God.
Though, if someone else has it, not you.
I can
never kind of point
drink
and laugh.
Fucking Jaeger bombs ever again.
You told me about this.
Never.
You
should. Never. No, I almost, that was bad.
Well, I remember the first time I got alcohol poisoning in high school when I graduated.
In high school?
I drank like 21 shots of vodka.
Wait, at once? Like at one time?
No, not one time.
You didn't stretch it out over a course of a week?
Maybe a course of an hour or two.
Oh, shit.
And I was literally crawling into my parents' house, like crawling in. Like the door opens and I'm crawling in the door. And my parents are like, what? Are you on drugs? What's wrong with you?
You're like, no, the water bottle had, and I'm so sleepy.
Literally, you walk in, I'm like, I threw up on the door to my house. I threw up down, like literally down the stairs, like throwing up down the stairs.
Oh,
crawling to my room.
Oh my, Mark, when was the first time you had alcohol poisoning? Let's go round table with this. Let's turn into the AA fucking podcast.
I hate to bring it down. I've never been drunk.
Okay.
Boy.
You don't drink at all?
I mean, I have a couple here and there, but.
Come on. If you've drank and you've never been drunk.
Never.
Really?
Never even been tipsy.
That's amazing self-control.
I mean, I don't know. My dad owned a liquor store, so I think I saw what it meant to be drunk at 6 a.m. at 87th and Commercial.
Shit, yeah.
So I was like, you know what? I don't really need to do that.
Wow. You do have great self-control.
That'll fucking turn
either that or you're just a tank.
That's what I was going to say.
That could probably be
Some people have a really high tolerance and they don't feel
process the liquor much quicker.
But that's one way to go straight. I'll tell you what, right from the get-go, waking
straight?
Up to fucking drunks in the morning when you're 6 years old.
Plus, it's much easier for me to take the money from the drunks when they don't know that they're passed out. I get extra cash.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes they got nice shoes.
Right.
Anyways, let's get into why we're here. I was talking to the new listener, but you'll figure this out as we go along.
Well, for the returning listener, you might remember this guy from our pastime show.
Yeah. So if this was – Mark Allen Fishman has been on the show before. And if this was a comic book in the panel of this moment right now, you would see a little caption box in the corner and it'd be an asterisk and it'd say see episode 18-ed.
There you go.
You are such a nerd. Holy fuck.
Jockey Nerd.
That's why the show is called
Jockey Nerd. But so if you go back to episode 18, and so real quick, let me recap. You guys actually saved our ass big time because, listener, if you do not know, we're offered by our friend Eric at Pastimes.
Yep.
He's like, why don't you record a show in a comic book? Great idea. You know, live recording. Only works if you have listeners in the neighborhood, in the area.
The
that
whole
will
show
come.
Was based around listener interaction.
So we plugged in. It was on social medias, but it was episode 18. We just started. Nobody's fucking listening.
And it was off hours for Pastimes. They're not open past 6.
Plus, it was also the season finale of Game of Fucking Thrones on HBO, which I didn't know at the time. And afterwards, I was like, oh, that was just a stupid night to do it. Having said that, we get there. We set up. And this is what we hear. So we're like, oh, shit. Now, we had no idea you guys were going to be there. I mean, Eric had mentioned buddies of mine are coming to shoot a video for that. We're like, all right, cool. Maybe talk to them. We didn't realize that you would be the guest of the show. And I felt that interview went really good, especially considering the fact that there was zero preparation on my end.
It works. I said, the funny thing is, on the reverse side, the way Eric had pitched it to us is he said, oh, well, there's a podcast that's being recorded here. And we're like, oh, crap. Are we like getting in the way of something that normally happens here on Sunday nights? And he didn't really tell me either way. So I'm like, oh, we're going to get in the way of somebody recording a show.
We both thought we were in each other's way. And look what happens. We both are helping each other out in our creative endeavors.
There you go.
There you go.
It fucking worked out. So that show was great. And it was funny.
Except for the fact that you didn't press record.
Well, I didn't press record for part of it. Learning.
Talking nerd.
We were learning.
Luckily, we had another camera.
Our friend Cam Gibson saved our ass. So there was much ass saving that whole night. And I can't thank everyone enough for doing all the ass saving.
My booty is happy.
It's very, yeah. It's very, and what a nice booty.
Wow.
What happened? Look at this picture of this Adonis looking down at me. I have the banner up. Look at, he's just, look. I can't. The eyes follow me.
Yeah, it's like the Mona Lisa. The very, eyes follow
it's very
you.
Very creepy.
Yeah.
But after that show, Mark had tweeted me a really funny tweet, and he was like, "I'm kind of jealous that Matt got all the personal questions." And it was true because Matt just went on, and we asked him about his influences, and it was a great conversation. I kind of felt bad. I mean, you got in towards the end, and we just like we needed more mics, and we didn't know what the fuck.
Oh, well, it's funny, like because I put it on my way home. I listened to a lot of podcasts from work, and I was like, okay, this is great. And like anybody else, you're like, I gotta hear what I sound like.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
And I'm listening, and they're like, oh, they missed that whole big block where I talked.
Yeah.
Oh, well, at least Matt's on there. And then, like, when I got to the end, I'm like, boy, I just come across as, like, business Jew is business.
I mean, it was – you started it, and it was still good. So that's why I said, you know, next time something big happens, finish book 4, come back on, and something big has happened.
Yes.
Listener, everything we talk about, we're going to have in the show notes. You're definitely going to want to check out these show notes. What have people said about our show notes?
The best show notes
the best
business.
Goddamn.
Jockey Nerd! These
will be the best one, though.
JockeyNerd.com.
You can help us get
/29. Yep. We will have links to Unshaven Comics online, and you can find them on Facebook at Facebook.com Unshaven Comics, and you can find Mark at Unshaven Mark on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So before we get to the Kickstarter, since we missed your whole fucking first part the last time, why don't you tell us a little bit the story of Unshaven Comics and how you guys got together?
Sure. Well, Unshaven Comics, really way before we had a name, we were all best friends since sixth grade.
Nice.
It literally just happened that Matt was from sort of this side of town. By the way, I'm completely suburbanite, so anything north of downtown is just north of downtown to me.
So, but you grew up in Chicago. You're from Chicago.
South suburbs.
South suburbs.
Yeah.
Oh, Homewood. South suburbs.
Yeah, okay. Homewood, Flossmoor. And
I don't know.
You made a trek. This is a
dude.
Trek.
God damn. Thank you for coming out here.
That's all right. I think I only ran 4 people off the road.
That's low for this neighborhood.
Pretty much, right?
Yeah. As long as a cop doesn't shoot at you, you're fine. Yeah. You're golden.
Well, again, Jew. They don't.
Yeah. Ah, that's
they
a good point.
Yeah. No, so,
oh, shit.
Matt came. He was new to the school district. His mom moved down. He went to a little private school, I think called St. Benedict, something like that.
Yeah.
So he was there through fifth grade, moved down for sixth grade. So he was new. And the way our school system worked is like you had all the kids from one elementary plus all the kids from the other elementary on the other side of school.
Okay.
So I thought he was just one of those other kids.
Oh.
And he didn't know anybody at all. So one of the first things we did in homeroom is they have like a little questionnaire, like who are you and what are you into? And
really?
So I just remember specifically under music, he wrote AC, Lightning Bolt, DC.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't know who that was, but I was like, oh dude, like Lightning Bolt. Okay, he's an artist. I'm an artist. And I just
the Lightning Bolt got him. Not
he likes the
AC,
Flash.
Not the AC/DC part. He likes electricity and drawing lightning bolts. I have to talk to this guy.
Exactly. So then I noticed, like, you know, at the study hall at the end of the day, he would just doodle. And I just happened to look over his shoulder, and I fancied myself an artist. Mm. And I looked at his stuff, and, like, immediately I'm like, well, fuck, he is so much better than I am. Mm. I must befriend him. Mm. And enslave him.
And steal his powers.
Right. So we immediately became fast friends. He told me he was into comic books. And, you know, I was like, well, I liked comics when I was in fourth grade. So that was 2 years ago. I was like, clearly I can get back into it. Because, you know, whatever. You're going to be best friends. And then out of nowhere, he's like, oh, by the way, this is Kyle.
Oh, shit.
He was in health class and he's cool.
Wait, you guys all met when you were like 14?
Not even, 12.
Wow.
And so the cool thing is, too, is like it just worked out. So Matt's birthday is December 1st. Mine's December 28th. Kyle's is January 26th. So all around the same time, right? So Matt invites me over to a sleepover for his birthday. I'm the only kid, him plus some kid from Chicago.
Oh.
So I'm like, oh, inner circle already? This works. Oh. And then for Kyle's birthday, he's like, you guys got to come over to my house. We're going to have a Nerf war. And I was like, your parents let you have Nerf guns in the house? Fuck all. Yes, I'm there. So we're like, okay, we are best friends now. Aww. That's it.
Nice.
So, and again, Matt's got all of this great artistic talent. I think I've got enough. And then Kyle, I believe even in sixth grade, he's like, you guys look like you're talented. I'm just going to ride your coattails forever. If you're cool with that.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can make that work.
Nice.
Hashtag Jew. So, I mean, really, at that point, we've been friends ever since. And it was literally in high school, getting into debates in Baker Square. Because, again, we're all nerds, comic book nerds, totally. So it was getting into debates, who would win in a fight between Batman and the Punisher.
Yeah.
Batman. And
that's debatable, but okay.
Again, I have to fall on this. We have these like lifelong debates. That's where I fall.
Yeah.
But then we split apart for college, and of course, like I thought, well, I was the only one who was going out of state. Yeah. Matt and Kyle stayed in town. Matt went to the American Academy of Art. Nice. Alex Ross's school.
Yeah, yeah.
Kyle decided to do 2 years at the local community college. He was going to do auto mechanics, so he could have a job.
Sure.
He really wanted to teach English, but whatever. He's like, oh, I'm gonna get my certification and then I'll work my way. So I figured, well, I'm going away. It's been really nice. Oh. Thank you guys. 6 weeks, and they're like, fuck this, we're gonna come see you.
Oh.
So they piled into a car, and every 6 weeks, I was only in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Yeah, where'd you go?
I went to IUPUI.
Okay.
Ooey Pooey.
And there's it's called the Heron School of Art.
Correct. Okay. The whole reason I loved it is that Heron itself was a private art school inside IU.
I was wondering about that because it says on your website, in your bio, the Heron School of Art in Indiana University. I was like, huh, there's a name. What was did you know about that program there beforehand?
Okay, so and continuing with the weird kismet destiny crap.
Yeah.
So Matt's mom was adamant about him going to art school, and I was dabbling in it in junior year. I was like, okay, and then senior year I committed. I'm like, I really love art. It's a challenge for me. I was an honors student. I was like, I could do a lot of things, but art was the only thing that felt like a challenge. I'm like, that's what I want to do.
Interesting.
So Matt's mom was taking him to these career days at the Art Institute.
Uh-huh.
So she's like, you should bring Mark. He should find a school too. So Matt and I are going around looking at all these different programs, and he's looking in San Francisco, and he's looking at all these places. And I'm just thinking, at that time, I applied to one school. And I was like, I'm going to get in. I'm smart, you know. I'm Jewish. I've got minority.
Oh, shit. That'll get you. That'll get you in anywhere.
By the way, take a drink every time I say Jew, people.
Yeah, talking nerd. That's two people if you're keeping track of
right. it. Right. So I literally got lost in the Art Institute while Matt went to go check out some school I wasn't interested in. And Heron was by itself in a room with an interior design school. It was like they were the bastard.
Oh no! Like, they got shoved in the wrong
section.
In
the corner. Nobody knows them.
Nobody was coming over there.
So I kind of like milled in and I'm like, oh, Heron School of Art, never heard of you. Indianapolis, that's not far away. Yeah. Tell me about it. And I mean, like, they pitched me perfect. They're like, it's a private art college, but you get all of your normal classes from real.
It's, you know, almost the best of art school and then
a real college
with a foundation.
So you get art school and like a real university experience.
Right. Okay. Though the only thing they did not tell me is that it was a commuter school. Like, yeah. IUPUI doesn't get a lot of destination people.
Oh.
So there was one dorm.
Oh.
And
for everybody?
Yeah, for all 200 of us.
Oh. Wait, for the art school itself?
No.
For the whole fucking university?
Yeah, when really? I was there. Now, wow. they have since changed. They added a bunch of on-campus housing.
They got some monies.
Actually, it's funny. Every time I leave a school, it gets way better.
Yeah.
when I left Heron, they shut down our old school because we were in the gentrified neighborhood.
Oh.
So we were literally off campus in, let's say, the not greatest part of Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Not bad, just old.
Yeah.
And then the second we left, they moved to a $35 million building on campus.
Shit. You miss out everything. It sounds like Notre Dame in South Bend, too, a little bit.
Yeah.
Where, like, right in Notre Dame, it's nice, but do not go outside. You're like, what the fuck war zone am I in? You know what? I had a similar thing when I went to art school. I applied to one fucking school. And the reason was, ever since I was a little kid, I just wanted to go to New York City.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I nice. Was like, I grew up watching just shows about – and I was like, I want to go to art school in New York City. I applied to Pratt Institute and actually got rejected with my first portfolio. They're like, look, you need more stuff from life. I went back, I redid it, and then they were like, okay. And I was like, oh shit. And then I'm 17 and for the first time I'm on my own in Brooklyn in fucking art school by myself. Awesome. I have no idea what the fuck.
Proto hipster days.
Yeah. And this is the early 90s.
It's funny too that you guys say you both applied to one school.
Yeah.
Because I share that as well.
Really?
I only applied to University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
You wanted to go there?
I wanted to go there. My family all went there, like my uncles and
my
relatives.
Oh, family. Okay.
So they were all like, you're going to go there? And I was like, yep, that's where I'm going to go. And I was like you, where I was like, I'm smart. I'm just going to get in. Minority. I'm half Asian.
And did it work?
I was involved. Yep. Involved in stuff. And
nerd!
Got in one application.
Your fucking half minority ass also got us in the Philippines.
That's
and on
true.
Our podcast out there. So it's come in handy several times.
Yeah, I like to use that, play that card.
Play it whenever you can.
So without knowing anything about the Heron School of Art, how was their program?
It was fantastic. I got to say, like, it was as real world an education as you're going to get, in so much as that these were really just artists that happened to draw a salary by teaching.
That's just like Pratt was, and that's what you want. You want the full-time illustrators.
Now, they didn't have – now, the funny thing is, though, like I immediately gravitated towards the graphic design program because I'm naturally inclined with computers, and I worked in the technology lab for work study. So I figured it was a done deal because I helped the graphic design kids in freshman year do their fucking assignments. And their graphic design program was hyper hipster. And they literally told me, this is what I liked about Heron. You know, anytime I've had something good happen in my life, it's because of tough love. So Heron forced you to do something called sophomore review. So every kid did foundation year, regardless of how good or bad you were.
Yeah.
And then at sophomore year, you had to show a portfolio and declare which direction you were going.
Yeah.
And they would either approve you or tell you to go do something else. So I literally walked in, head on a swivel, like, yeah, graphic design, thank you very much. I'll start next year. And they're like, no, you
have – excuse me.
Literally, they said, you have too much personal style. You will never be a graphic designer.
Oh, shit.
And I was like, oh, fancy that. So at that point, it was sort of a wake-up call.
What kind of bullshit is that?
I totally disagreed with them at the time. I understand in hindsight. What they were trying to tell me is that you will eventually have clients or – someone who's giving you an assignment, and they don't want your heavy, ham-fisted personal style to get in the way of their corporate branding.
But that's why you go to school, to learn that you have to strip your shit down and listen, do what they – because I went through exactly the same fucking thing. We had foundation class, right? Everyone took foundation class, then declared media. Anyways, first year, anatomy, drawing, the whole time I'm like – I know how the fuck to draw. I'm not gonna listen to him. A year goes in, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, this guy actually knows what he's talking about. And it took me about a year and a half to forget everything and just listen to the dude, and that was like a huge breakthrough for me.
And for me, it was honestly like...
But they didn't give you that chance!
Well, I mean, again...
Stop yelling.
I'm pissed off because it's bullshit for art school to do that.
Again, it turns out okay. Don't worry.
Okay.
No,
let me breathe. Okay.
What happens is that... I mean, essentially what they're saying is like, look, you're not far off, but we'd like you to take another year... do this, and this. Now, the thing is, I'm paying out-of-state tuition, which is terribly expensive.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? Fuck that. I'm going to do just – I can declare general fine art from here and take whatever the hell I want.
Oh.
And because at that point, it was sort of a wake-up call and me saying, look, I have the technical proficiency to be a graphic designer. I don't need your school to tell me how to make a business card.
Yeah.
Just let's be honest.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But I could use more instruction with illustration and other things.
Yeah.
So I declared general fine arts. I found printmaking and woodcut.
Oh, cool. I love woodcuts.
Yeah,
dude.
And I had an absolute epiphany in junior year. Basically, I was taking this monotype woodcut course, and I was phoning the whole fucking thing in because I was like, I wanted to do computer stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I only took the course because it was the only thing offered at the particular time I wanted to take a class.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck this. I don't want to paint watercolors on a piece of plastic.
Yeah.
How dumb is that?
Yeah.
And we got to the woodcut part of the class, and they gave you a board, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna be Frank Miller style.
Yeah.
Heavy blacks.
Yeah.
Meaning you cut like
just
three
a little bit. Yeah.
You cut three fucking
lines. The process is a removal process. For those who don't know, real quick.
What is wood cut?
And I did it, you could do it on linoleum panels, and I used to do it a lot. Basically, you get a piece of wood, you're gonna sketch on it, and with a whittling device, you are gonna scoop out the negative space, meaning where the lines aren't.
Oh.
Anything that's white that you want white, anything you don't want ink on, you scoop it out. So right away, it's an amazing exercise in thinking backwards.
Right.
And now you could take that same panel and do multiple colors. Here's where it gets really complicated because you have to think in reverse. You have to think, first I'm going to cut out the red, then I'm going to cut out the blue, then I'm going to cut out what the white is, leaving just the black. And I don't even know if that's right, but it's like a reverse subtractive – but there's great German woodcut, a whole thing, and I love those. I was very inspired by like the German expressionist woodcuts, and it's just a lot of fun. And it's such a physical art form.
It was great. And I said, like, the teacher there, David Morrison, this is like one of those like mentor moments, right? So I turn in the very first woodcut and I put it up there, and it was like a faux comic page, like, because I'm declaring I'm comic guy.
Yeah.
And it was like four, like, scrape, scrape, scape, I'm done.
Yeah.
And he did
it's
this.
Abstract.
Yeah. He did this so wonderfully. He gets up in front of the whole class and staring daggers right through me, but talking to the class.
Yeah.
He goes, I just want to let everybody here know you get out of this what you put into it.
Oh, shit.
That's and great. It hit me like a ton
looking
of bricks.
Looking right at you.
And I'm like, I get it now. So I went back to him. And this is probably the first time in 3 years where I had really felt like, okay, I got to get my shit together. So I went to him privately. I'm like, look, I'm really sorry. I know what you mean. Give me another chance. He's like, you did fine. He's like, but I understand. So the next board, I cut that thing to fucking ribbons.
Nice.
And I used a 1 millimeter gouge.
Oh, the really small one. You were
the smallest you could get.
This is like, if you look at like a dollar bill, like etching, like it's similar to that. So to finish the process, you cut the shit out, you roll ink on it, and then you lay paper on it and transfer the ink.
And you just squeeze it through a press.
And you squeeze it through or however you do it. Like you use a spoon, you just gotta put some pressure, and then you peel the paper off and you have a print. And so you can make a lot of prints and then you number
them. Is that how they do money?
Well, money is off an etching plate,
which
is
similar.
It's similar. It's like intaglio print. It's another form of printmaking. And then there's like linotype, which is fucking nuts. And I did that too. That is like a chemical reaction where you're working with a large stone in the machine and you got to keep it. It's the most insane fuck. Like you draw on a stone and you get it. I'm like, why don't you just draw it on the fucking piece of paper and go through all this fucking mess?
I got Photoshop right here, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I think I saw people doing this stuff in Lethal Weapon 4. I saw some illegal Chinese people.
Oh, they had the counterfeit machine.
Counterfeit machines. And they were doing etching and
stuff. Chinese are they're skilled
artists. I was in there. I was actually.
That was you? Oh, you were that Chinese guy?
Yeah. I can pass.
Okay, so maybe they did you a favor by.
They did. And I said, like, in senior year, basically, like, after I finished that in junior year, Morrison came back to me and he's like, look, he's like, how about next year you do a senior project with me? So one full year to do whatever you want.
Oh.
And you get course credit. So at that point, I was like, you know what? Let's try something hard. So, like, I'm going to do 16 interconnected panels.
What?
So one mural, each panel 8x10. So the, or I'm sorry, 18x24.
18x24?
So the whole piece, when it was put together, was 8 feet wide by 10 feet tall.
This is all still woodcuts?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
And it took me one full year of school and enough wood shavings to choke a horse. But and I cut the whole thing with 1 millimeter gouge.
Oh, my God. Are you trying to make yourself crazy?
The funny thing is, like,
I bet it was nice and detailed.
You get into that zone.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, it really allowed you to, like, turn your brain off and just scrape away
it's
and make art.
It's very therapeutic.
But coming out of that, I mean, to actually bring it way back to the original question, when we graduated high school or graduated college, having done that project, I told Matt, like, we need to make comics because now I know what it means to, like, dive into a project and I don't care how long it takes. And he was like, I'm all for it. When do we do it?
It sets you up. Okay.
And I was like, okay, yeah. I was like, as soon as we figure out what we're going to make. And we did one Ashcan comic book. It was called The Martyr, and we were all dark and angsty.
Yeah.
And basically, this was my way of saying fuck you to my roommate, who I thought was a fucking slob, and I hated him. So I tried to spin it. I'm like, what if a superhero got all his powers through illegal drugs, and he was just a douche? like the media thought he was cool.
Yeah.
But in real life, he was just an ass. And it was really just my fuck you to the roommate. And we even drew it to look
Did everybody think he was cool and he wasn't?
Oh, he was – well, again, it was like a 20-page thing. And I thought
– No, your roommate.
Oh, he never knew.
Did people think he was cool and
No.
Okay.
Douche.
Full on douche. Man, I can
– What douchebag qualities did he have? Because I'm experienced in the douchebag
culture. He has a master's actually in douchebaggery.
Okay.
He studied it up.
I have a doctorate in bullshit.
Very good.
Oh, shit.
Jockey nerd.
Okay. Let's see here. Without giving away too much, this is absolutely the God's honest truth, what he told us, that he was trained by a traveling ninja, he could not cry because there were genetic tests that sealed his tear ducts.
Okay.
That he had a pair of cat claws, like the ninja weapons.
Yeah, the climbing ones.
Right. And he would like to take walks, and he could smell people from a mile away.
Do you think he was mentally stable?
Yeah, I think that he
what is all that?
He really heavily wanted to get laid and hoped that any of that shit would work.
It's kind of creative, though. Like, he should have wrote a comic book. Like, traveling ninja as opposed to a stationary ninja? Like,
tear ducts,
though.
Tear ducts? Like, what is
– That's not even douchebag. That's just like
– That's kind of creepy.
Creepy, yeah. I'm a weird guy.
It was just sort of like – I don't know if, like, he was trying to troll me or – but it was like – no, he was legit about it. And, like, all of his buddies, like – You sort of like, you know, I had my inner circle, Matt and Kyle, and I sort of eroded into his inner circle, but then realized mid-circle, I'm like, these guys are all stupid and I don't want to be anywhere near them. I think I'm just going to call Matt and Kyle. I'll wait 6 weeks and let him come back.
Yeah.
I stayed in Indianapolis after I graduated. Matt and Kyle moved to Indianapolis because they had nothing better to do.
Nice.
And just as it would happen on Facebook, one of my friends from high school, she pinged me and she's like, hey, you and Matt ever start making comics? I'm like, yeah, all the time. Total lie. And she's like, well, my mom's a publisher and she needs somebody to do a book. Would you guys be interested? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. We can free up our schedule. Total lie. And
you got to see what it takes.
We came back to Chicago. We put on our best polo shirts and you know,
best polo shirts.
Hey, we're 20. We didn't have a lot of money. And we, you know, met with her and her brother. Very nice couple. They had a small publishing company called Mendoza Publishing.
Okay.
Mainly what they did is they would translate graphic novels to Spanish, and then they would sell them
cool.
in Mexico and South America.
Yeah.
Well, they went to the Chicago Immigration March in 2006. If you remember, the people marched from Millennium from Grand Park to Millennium.
Yeah.
400,000 people marched. No civil unrest. It was a great march, and they wanted to commemorate it. So they had this pitch where they said, we want you to do a comic book just celebrating that march. We don't care what you do. We just want that, you know, come back to us with a pitch. So we thought about it for a weekend and we came back. We're like, okay, what if we did four interconnected stories that aren't real, but it would be like indicative of the type of people that were in the march.
Oh.
And they loved the idea. And at that point, we committed. In 2006, we signed a contract to make the book with them. Now, clearly, they knew we were untested.
Your first official contract.
Well, we figured, hey, we're breaking the fuck in.
Yeah. First, you're like, this is it. We got the foot break in the door. This is it.
We're getting in through the Latino
nowhere
market.
But up from here, people.
Oh, yeah. And trust me, they painted a pretty picture. They're like, hey, we know a guy who knows a guy who is at the school of Sasha and Malia.
Oh, shit.
Right?
Yeah.
This is way before Obama had been elected. So they're like, we're going to get you in there. Next thing you know, it's the next stop the world, right?
I have a feeling the story takes a weird turn really soon.
No, not really. Okay. We finished the book. It took the better part of a year because we had day jobs.
Yeah.
Two of us got married.
Wow.
And we moved back home.
Full color?
Full color. It was 54 pages by the time it was done.
Wow, that's a lot of work, dude.
It wasn't. We had a little bit of trickery, I'd like to say. Okay. Using the graphic design skill, the idea would be that Matt would draw all of the characters and that we would take pictures of the march. They literally walked the path of the march and took pictures and I rotoscoped.
Okay.
So they sort of married into a style. I mean, again, it was green. We were green. But the book came out in 2008. It was called The March, Crossing Bridges in America.
So to explain, basically, you use the pictures as reference.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, they were our own pictures. So it wasn't like we stole anybody's anything.
No, and that's a valid way. Like a lot of artists, like if you're Tim Bradstreet Punisher covers.
Exactly.
Have you ever seen those?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
They're all shot from – he knows a dude that looks like the Punisher and he shoots all that and he draws. And I notice, and we'll get to it, when we get to the Samronauts, I believe you're still utilizing a little bit that technique to this day.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a time saver, isn't it?
It is. I'm going to say it's how I learned to work. So, okay. In that particular case, you know, it was a means to an end. And I think the cooler thing coming out of the march is that the book Mendoza told us to make it silent. They didn't, because they were like, we don't have to print it in 50 languages if it doesn't have any words. And like, okay, well, we'll try to make that work.
Oh, that's kind of clever, though. That saves some money.
So we
was that hard, though? Like when you were like,
no, this is a pure exercise in fucking graphic storytelling, is what it is. Yeah, right? It can be done, and sometimes those are the most amazing books.
And so I think we told the story decently. But what happened is we got to the point where all the artwork was done. It was 54 pages. We had sort of agreed, like at first we were saying it was going to be 72, but really around the 54 page mark, I'm like, I think we told the story. / I'm really tired. Please let me stop.
That 54 pages is fucking a lot.
Especially when it's every night, weekend, and holiday and sick day. Because, again, we had day jobs. This is not like something that we had all the time in the world to do. But what essentially happened is the publisher came back to me and she's like, I feel like this is missing something. And I was like, words? And she's like, yeah, she's like, could you take a stab at it? So literally over the course of one weekend without sleep.
They made you go back and put fucking words in it?
I lettered the whole book. I wrote the whole book in a weekend. Matt and Kyle literally stayed at my house and just slept on my couch while I just pounded Mountain Dews and Starbucks double shots.
Oh, my God.
And got my way through 54 pages. Now, again, we didn't do a lot of word balloons. I did the whole thing in caption.
Okay.
It was minimal, but I still have to tell a story.
But narrative, this captions is good.
So I'd say like the book, when they finished it off, we did our first show, which was the Wizard World Chicago in 2008. That's when the book officially hit. Essentially, the payment was they gave us like $500.
Wow.
And they gave us a box of books. And they're like, they're yours. Sell them for what you want. Do with them what you want.
Oh, nice.
And we did that first show. And
so did they go to – they had a booth at Wizard World or you guys took those books and went to – and got a table?
Yeah. They gave us the books and said, God bless.
That's kind of smart.
Dios mío.
Yeah. Basically, their notion was like, we'll try to sell this online and in bookstores. And they're like, and you can just take them and do what you want. Like essentially, that was like the here's your payment because let's be honest, $500 for like a year and a half worth of work is like shit.
That's complete shit.
Again, this is like not our – this is not a full-time job. So it's like, look, I think we both got out of that what we were hoping.
Yeah.
Right.
You got some practice.
Practice. And really more than anything, it cemented to us by the time it was done and we did that first show and we sold – 48 books over the course of a weekend.
Nice.
And we felt like fucking rock stars. Yeah. We're like, we came out like, we sold almost 50 books and they're educational.
Yeah.
Like, next to people selling cool books about cool shit.
With big titted women and scantily clad
things.
And I got
54 pages of people smiling and waving.
Yeah, you're pretty much selling a parade book.
Right?
A book about a parade, a march. And that's fantastic.
But I will say, like, the cooler thing coming out of that was that a lot of people responded in so much as they're like, well, this is not something you see normally at these shows. And we came out of that really at that point. You know, we came up with the name. We're like, okay, we're Unshaven Comics because we needed a name at the last second.
Oh, that's where the name started.
And I was
like,
well, we've always had facial hair. So I was like, that works. And the notion after that, when we were left, were like, we were bit by the bug. We're like, we have to do this again. But let's do something that we actually want to do.
Yeah.
And by that time, we're like early mid-20s. So we're like, well, we got to be fucking edgy and cool and graphic and evil and dark and twisted.
R-rated.
Oh, absolutely.
All that shit, yeah.
So we immediately dived in. We started doing an anthology series. So like it was like the Twilight Zone in that each comic book was a full fleshed out 24-page story.
Okay.
And then there was like a bumper.
But there was like, oh, cool.
That would tie everything together.
Ah, that's cool.
So the first book was called Chasing Daylight.
Okay.
That was four dudes taking their annual brocation, which I, to this day.
Brocation.
We came up with that first.
Wow. Back in 2008?
That would be like 2009. But yeah, go back. It's there.
That's early for brocation.
Yeah, we coined brocation.
I don't think people were doing the bro.
No,
I think you need to update the Urban Dictionary entry for that.
It's going
to
be I hope one of the Jock and Nerd listeners will do our Wikipedia page for us.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Somebody get on that shit.
There you go.
I don't know how the internet works.
Me neither. No, so we did that Chasing Daylight. So four guys on their brocation. They stop off in the middle of the Pennsylvania woods so one kid can go take a piss, and they get attacked by a demonic entity that essentially challenges them to stay in daylight for 24 hours. Now, if you continuously travel west.
Oh, they have to stay in daylight. You're going to hit the water.
You could, but what, you can't get a boat or a plane? Yeah. Your life's on the line, right?
Yeah.
So it really becomes this 24-page story of how much are you friends with your friends?
Yeah.
Like, if something's chasing you and you're going to die, would you throw your friend out of the car? right?
That is good. Like,
to slow him down?
Like a question of morality.
How good of a friend are you? That was issue one.
It was more or less just a great
story. Cool. I want to read that.
Yeah. It's kind of Stray Bullets, like David Laffam Stray Bullets, but like supernatural Stray Bullets.
Right. And then the second issue, that was Kyle's. That was all him.
Okay.
So then I wrote the next one. Issue two was called Ironside Living Will. So the idea is that Ironside, this was more of a superhero beat 'em up, but like R-rated. So Ironside is a World War II veteran superhero. He's one of the first superheroes.
Okay.
And now he is old and crotchety, and he buries his last friend, like the guy, you know, he's the last one alive, right? So he essentially just looks at the world at large and says, you know what? I'm going to go out fucking swinging instead of filling bedpans. So he suits himself up one last time. He's kind of like a Colossus.
Okay.
Take on that character, you know, metal skin and all
okay,
that.
He's all metally.
Right. Metally and strong and impervious. So it's essentially.
But older now, right?
Hmm?
Older.
Old Colossus.
We're talking like super duper old man Wolverine old.
Okay.
And the notion that he's going to do things the way that he could never do before. So this was my excuse basically to like. You know, like Catwoman and Batman, they have like this little sexual foreplay thing.
Yep, yep.
Well, what happens if you really face someone with super strength, right? So I literally have we have Black Puma or Blanca Puma or whatever he called her. And she like does a bunch of like flip kicks and, you know, she's making fun of him. And he literally just in the most misogynistic way possible beats the shit out of her.
Oh, my God.
Jeez.
Oh,
like I told Matt he was doing the art. And I'm like, I want you to make this. I want women to picket our booth.
Yeah.
Like, and it's
sounds great.
Yeah, right? and I would say the awesome. Real hook of the story, though, is that as it turns out, within the universe, Ironside's son, who is estranged and that he never knew, his father wasn't around, Ironside wasn't around. He's now the universe's Superman,
oh.
so to speak. So it literally becomes a.
So he has to take him down now.
Father and son.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's that's
the,
awesome.
It's
that's
like,
cool.
I want you to
that's
kill
a really
me.
Good story.
And
you're
like,
a motherfucking creative.
You.
Yeah, no. Oh. And the writing.
Who comes up with this, like, the story arc like that?
And I mean, literally creativity. In that case, for Chasing Daylight and then Ironside, it was just. I told Kyle, write what you want, and yeah. then this was my idea to say, like, I had done something similar in college where I had this idea of old crotchety superhero, and I'm like, okay. I like the idea, and just coming back and fleshing it out. And really at that point it was, what can I do that plays to Matt's strengths, because yeah. he's really solid at superhero stuff.
Yeah.
And again, we're 20, we're edgy, we yeah. want to be mean.
Yeah.
So it's like, I need an excuse to swear
yeah.
and to say bad things. The first thing that happens when you get to Chasing Daylight, like we said before, is that discussion about if you go down on your own clone, does that make you gay?
Oh, yeah. That was from episode 18, yeah, listener. Right.
Yeah.
And I still don't have an answer to
and
that.
Yeah, I don't. I'm up at night fucking trying to figure that out.
I wake
still.
Up in a cold sweat wondering if me going down on my clone would make me gay.
There's only one way to find out.
There is.
We're going to have to.
Well, everyone to the cloning facility.
Right? No.
Talking nerd.
What ends up happening is that's issues 1 and 2. We get to issue 3. And it's like, okay, well, what do we do now? And essentially what happens is Matt goes to me. He's like, I have done the interior art now for 2.5 books.
Oh, boy.
Fuck you.
It's your turn.
You're doing the book. And I'm nice. Like, no, please stop. And you've seen Matt. He's bigger than me. Yeah. So I'm crying. And
yeah,
like,
you can't. You kind of have to do what he says.
So he's like, how about this? You do half. I'll do half. Let's figure out something that allows us to do that. And we thought about it. There's a joke page in the back of issue 1. We literally had nothing else to put there. So I was like, let's make an advertisement for Disposable Razors 20. And we're like, what should we make it? And we're like, it should have monkeys or Power Rangers or dinosaurs or whatever. So we just sketch out this really stupid idea called the Samronauts. We put it on the back page.
That's great.
And oh, then wow. I'm sitting That's there amazing. Going, how are we not doing a story about this a monkey is, and dinosaurs? And
yeah. Are any of these earlier books available on your website at unshavencomicsonline.com? Link in the show notes, shockandnerd.com/20.
In fact, they are. And if people stay tuned.
Oh, look at that.
They're going to find out a way that they can get all those books for free.
Oh. All right. Stay tuned, listener.
$3.99 is the best.
We yeah. got – if it's free, it's me. That's yeah. what I like to say.
Right?
All right.
So
all right.
issue 3
this of – gets better. Keep going.
Issue 3 of Disposable Razors, we decide – okay, we're going to do the Samronauts, and the conceit is he's an immortal kung fu monkey, right? So we're like, it's taking Splinter from the Teenage Mutant Turtles yep. and marrying it to Zordon of the Power Rangers.
Yes.
Because Zordon's an immortal.
Yes.
And he raises a bunch of groups of teens with attitude or whatever.
Yep.
And we're like, okay, but ours is going to fucking fight. No head in a jar. This is going to be like Splinter on the front line.
It's a badass fucking monkey, dude.
Right. So the idea being like, okay, I can do stuff in the future because my style is really – graphic design, heavy, Photoshop, glow effect, I've been told, sterile, that kind of style.
Well.
I mean, it is what it is. And I've
You'd rather have your art style be sterile than something else, right?
Right, true. My art has impregnated no women.
My art can swim. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And Matt's got this wonderful, painted, illustrative style. And I was like, that clearly makes sense for you to do the Samronauts of the past. And this also gives Kyle a chance to write and me a chance to write. And it just
that does work really well, just Imran pulling that up.
Mark
was nice enough to forward some PDFs of the first 3 books, and I read the first volume, and I started reading the second volume, and the writing is really good. I love the art style, and what you said is exactly what right. I got. Yeah. I was like, this is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles crossed with Power Rangers.
Yeah, it's absolutely – it's everything we loved growing up as kids.
I'm going to show you my favorite image right here, and I will put this – I'll put a clip of this in the show notes. And you're going to be mad because it's not one of your pages.
No, trust me. I am perfectly fine with that not being.
It's down here.
That totally works with him, with his style.
This.
And looking like
the dude, look at that shit.
Oh, that's fucking great. I love that page. It's a splash page with Captain Blackstar.
Captain Blackstar, who is a zombie pirate robot thing?
Yes.
Cyborg pirate?
He starts off, they are pirates. They work with this – we're just simply calling her the Sea Witch. She essentially gives them immortality by being zombies. Not the brain zombie kind, but more like what we call a voodoo zombie.
Yeah.
So they're undead. And the notion is, I got my arm lopped off. Well, it doesn't just reattach, so I'm just going to replace it with an alien arm.
Or a cyborg arm.
Or whatever you can find.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that way I can get away with saying they're zombie cyborg space pirates.
Yeah, dude. It has everything in all this thing.
Yeah, I know it does.
But I'd say, like, when we put this together, right? So just as I did with you guys here, Kyle's been the consummate pitch man at all the shows, and I had to sort of sit in the middle. But, like, we were honing this craft of being able to pitch to somebody in 20 seconds, like, how do I get someone to understand what Chasing Daylight's about or what Ironside's about? So we've pitched hundreds, if not thousands, of times. The first time, Kyle just says, it's a story about samurai astronauts led by an immortal kung fu monkey fighting transforming demon dinosaurs and zombie cyborg pirates in space.
Oh, shit.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That gives me
geek moment.
Oh, my God.
And I'll tell you, like, again, we've been at that point when we first came out with that, we're talking maybe a dozen shows. We'd never heard reaction before like this where fans literally said, shut up and take my money.
Instantly.
You're done. Give me.
That's literally the perfect pitch.
Like $5?
Yeah.
Okay, we're done.
I mean, talk about your elevator pitch. Like, it's the most concise. That's all you got to say. Like, what movie producer wouldn't want to fucking make that? Like, it's a great idea.
Preach, sister.
This show is listened by nobody, so someone will pick this up.
We'll take it. No, I said, like, and really at that point, by that point, Matt and I both married, now both had sons on the way.
Oh.
And it was. The notion of saying we finished the Samurnauts, and first of all, the fan reaction was great. Second of all, I'm like, look, we had our dark days. That was cute. But the Samurnauts is so much fucking fun. And now I can pitch to everybody.
Yeah.
Like, anybody who walks by the table. Like, when we had Chasing Daylight, and that your first page has got the word fuck on it.
Yeah, it's,
and you see an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
You really do. Unless you have no soul, you're like, I can't. Is your kid okay with that?
Yeah.
Now I can just put this book in the hands of anybody.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you know, why shoot yourself in the foot?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, comedians that can not work blue get more business.
You know, and it's kind of like
PG-13
show also. And podcasting medium in general. A lot of people say, like, look, if you want to make it big, you don't want to swear.
Well, fuck.
Fuck all that. But again, when we, like, don't you feel like when you'd recommend someone, like, you really have to think, is this person going to be offended by anything? Then don't fucking listen.
I mean, just a quick, when we were pitching to one of our coworkers to be on the show, and then I thought about it after, I was like, he can't.
Yeah, see?
He can't.
So, but what you have done is, it's a family-friendly book, listener, which is
all ages.
All ages. But it's a huge market.
It is.
This is a PG-13 of fucking comic books.
And I would say, like, I mean, again, it's for anybody in our generation that liked Ninja Turtles and Power Rangers. I got a name drop, Exo Squad.
Yeah.
The single best cartoon of all time.
Oh, Exo Squad.
Exo fucking Squad.
Which one was Exo Squad?
They were.
Did I watch this?
I hope you did. If you're not, like, please look
it up. You bring up Power Rangers. And this is just a tangent because I just like to
take things.
Have you noticed how Apocalypse kind of looks like Ivan Ooze?
Oh, he absolutely
does. Why does he look like Ivan Ooze? That's a big,
I actually think that somebody, you guys have seen the memes where, like, the people at cosplay at SDCC looked better.
Yeah. There's tons of cosplayers look better.
I think that Brian Singer is just not telling people. He fucking must have loved the Power Rangers. He's like, I've got the perfect thing. Like, he literally he pulled the suit off the rack. He's like, look, for $5, they'll let me use this.
Did you like the Power Rangers movie?
The movie, I think, like, we were just about at that age where Power Rangers, like, you had to make that hard line split.
Yeah,
like, you either thought it was the best thing or, like, my childhood is over.
Yeah.
And we were sort of riding that line. The whole reason the Samurnauts starts, to be honest, the whole conversation started with me saying, why does Rita fucking attack the same town in L.A. every day at 3 p.m.? If I were her, I would attack London at midnight.
They'll never know.
Well, not only that, and, like, how long must it have taken them to get those Zords there? Because clearly one of them came out of a volcano. The other one was clearly coming out of an iceberg every fucking time. You think they might as well have just parked them, like, in the observatory?
See, here's the thing. I think I was too old for Power Rangers because I did not really
So the movie for me,
it.
When I, like,
or
I
the TV show.
The movie for me and the TV show when they first came out was in the sweet spot for me. So I always look back.
You were the perfect age.
Looking back on it as nostalgia. You know, like every time you look back.
It's interesting.
When you're like older and you look back at nostalgia, and
maybe singers.
It was better back
maybe
then.
Maybe singers trying to capture that audience's nostalgia.
I sure fucking
is it a strategic move?
You know, it's all about performance, right?
Did he have a catchphrase? You didn't Oops. Remember. Did he ever say anything? What did he sound like? I'll be honest,
I've shut off most of that movie, and like there were bits and pieces I liked about Power Rangers. I liked that they had individual weapons. If I were the black guy, I would have just shot everybody with the bazooka every fucking time. But I remember watching that movie and going, wait, seriously, did we just have a 90-minute preamble to a dick punch?
Yeah.
Oh, it ended with a dick punch?
Oh, sorry, a dick knee.
Knee to the dick.
What do you call those giant things?
That's the
Megazord?
Oldest.
The
Megazord? So it ended with a fucking Three Stooges slapstick gag, pretty much?
They have to go, all right, guys, there's only one way to win. Hit the big button. And they do, and literally it just cuts to the Megazord kneeing Ivan Ooze in the balls.
Oh, shit. The button was in his groin?
No. Their button in their machine was this is the secret weapon.
Oh, which is the knee to the groin.
And I just remember saying, at that point, horrible. You could hear my childhood crumb. I'm like, I'm getting too old for this shit. And I'm in sixth fucking grade.
I love the Three Stooges, and it sounds horrible.
It's just a matter of saying, at what point does the – do you have reverence for what you're doing? Does the title take itself seriously? Which is what Samurnauts does.
It's a fine balance.
We understand that the concept sounds really out there, but if you read the book, you're like, okay, seriously, no one's fretting over the fact that there's a talking kung fu monkey.
First of all, I think I was too old for Exo Squad.
It's okay. Go back. It holds up.
Okay. But I like the way the book just kind of starts, you know, with the team in the middle of a fight and, you just get to meet them,
right?
And you kind of figure out what's going on, and it's jumping from the samurai version to these like future age versions. But the lettering, you do the lettering?
Yes.
The lettering is phenomenal because each of the characters, just like Teenage Mutant Turtles or the Power Rangers, they're color-coded. Yes. You know, like the turtles have the colored things, and their word bubbles are color-coded, so you kind of know who's talking. But then the bad guys have a different style of word bubbles, and even the special effect lettering, like, this is so good. Like, I love this.
When you drop people to, like if you start a book or a movie in the middle of a fight, like, you quickly have to get acclimated, so you're not thinking about, oh, wait, this is ridiculous. You're literally just like, oh, I'm in the middle of the
story. That's like
a
great storytelling
thing. Instead of building
thing,
an origin,
drop
you know,
them right in the middle.
If you do an origin story, you can be like, I see the flaws in this.
But I like that there wasn't an origin. Did we get to the origin?
There is an origin, and we did. Well, technically, Curse of the Dreadnoughts, Samurnauts in Disposable Razors 3. That was the origin.
Oh,
so the in canon joke about this is that the story, the bumpers of Disposable Razors, we called the White, where essentially you, Imran, a day-to-day worker who has been so enamored in nerditry, essentially just walks out the door in the middle of a rainstorm and ends up in an interdimensional space where there are an infinite number of portals. And
it's very Grant Morrison.
Very, totally. But the notion was that so he would come to a window and then he would watch the rest of the story. So like that's how he watches Disposable Razors, or that's how he watches Jason Daylight.
It's so Grant Morrison with what he's doing with Multiversity right now.
He stole it from us.
Right? Yeah, he did. Yes, he did.
Not at all.
We're
so
coming after you, Morrison. Oh, shit.
Right.
Take you down.
No, it happened. So in issue 3, Disposable Razors,
that would be the first appearance then, right?
That's the first appearance. And the way we set it up is that the character, the narrator, if you will, basically says to the host of this interdimensional portal zone, he's like, I don't want any of your bullshit. I want to watch my favorite cartoon growing up. The Samurnauts.
Oh, wow.
So what he watches is the Lost episode.
Yes.
Where they do the origin.
Yes. Wow, this is great. It's like Monty Python meets Grant Morrison.
We're some trippy motherfuckers.
Yeah, dude.
So then we did that origin tale, and when it came time after we finished that origin, we're like, this is so much fun. We have to do a miniseries. And at that point in time, we're like, we'll just do one graphic novel, 98 pages. It'll take us a year. But what happened in doing that is exactly what happened. We're like, okay, we did the dinosaur thing. Let's come up with another villain. And at that point, like, the zombie thing had been played out. And we're like,
yeah.
How do we how do we ride that, but do something, do a new spin on it? And I was like, well, let's make it zombie something, zombie mason workers or zombie blacksmiths.
Yeah.
I think Kyle's like, how about zombie pirates? And then Matt's like, how about zombie pirates with alien technology?
Yeah, just fucking cram all that shit together. All the hot shit, sci-fi shit. Why not? You know what? No one's ever done that.
It's a, like it's a, the pitch. The book sells itself.
Yeah.
And so we've been working on this for the last 4 years.
You know, and it's a lot like – I remember in the late 80s when I started collecting, when Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came out and it hit, there was a string of – teen mutated animal group.
Oh yeah, you told me about
titles.
This.
Oh, I could give you.
There was hamsters, irradiated hamsters. There was Usagi Yojimbo, who is a giant bunny.
Though to be fair, he predates the turtles.
He predates, and Flaming Carrot was also around that time. Which literally, this guy was a giant carrot with arms and legs.
But you know, there's a great book that way, though.
No, I forget.
Flaming Carrot became Flaming Carrot because he read too many comic books.
Oh, shit. Oh, that's
and
great.
He just woke up that way.
He was
so everyone was trying to capitalize on making these animals.
Oh, but you haven't even hit
objects
on the best ones.
No, what was
the Cowboys of Mumesa.
Okay.
They were cows.
Oh, cowboys.
Battletoads, of course.
Battletoads, yes.
Street were the, sharks.
Were these
street
all
sharks?
Biker mice from Mars. I could go on.
Yeah, there was multiple
were,
waves.
Were these all – were they trying to be serious like the Turtles was?
Hell no.
No, they're all –
they're all more tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah. So there was a wave in the comic books, and then there was a wave – when the cartoon came out, there was a wave of copycat cartoons trying to sell toys. Basically, they would just design the toy first and fucking shove some story and make it a cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like how I think G.I. Joe Transfer all the shit started. Really,
everybody loves anthropomorphic, whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, say we just keep the monkey. That's it.
Yeah, no, the monkey's great, and because he totally reminds me of like badass Splinter.
He is, but I'd say that he best Splinter because he pilots a fucking giant robot.
I think your monkey could take Splinter, no problem.
Well, he's also immortal,
and Splinter's old as fuck.
Yeah,
Splinter's old as
Splinter's
fuck.
Splinter's an old ass man, and you can't kill the monkey. What's the monkey's name?
Al.
Master Al.
Master Al. But to don't. We did the.
Of course.
Here's why. All of the monkeys shot into space were named Albert.
Oh.
He is Albert Five, have the lost
them,
monkey.
Have any of those monkeys come back?
No.
So what are they? Why do they shoot those monkeys into space?
Because they didn't want to shoot humans.
Right. And there was a dog too.
There was a dog. Yeah. Yeah.
Which, so I mean, that's how we started the idea. Is like we're like, hey, if you shot a monkey into space,
there's monkeys in space. Think, wait, just I just thought there's fucking monkeys flying around in space.
Are
literally.
They alive? You think?
Well, they were at one point, but
they're dead. Their bodies.
There's monkey.
Monkey carcass in space.
There's monkey carcasses in space, people.
And they're just like floating.
This is a travesty. When
you're in space, though,
some shit.
The travesty will be the Adam Sandler movie when they make monkey carcasses.
Oh, we'll get into that movie later.
Pixels.
Fuck, dude.
But there's a monkey, in space, there's no wind, so they're just floating out there, right?
Well, they're still in the capsule.
I'm assuming, yeah. But
it has to be propelled.
Who knows how bodies
system.
Decompose in space,
now all I can think about is monkey bones.
I'm trying
in space.
To think of the monkey in space.
Right? Anyways, back to this shit.
What about this monkey in space?
I know a secret about the purple Samurnaut.
Yeah.
Can I reveal it?
Please do.
The purple Samurnaut. Look, who does that look like, Anthony? Right here. It's Dwight from Past Times.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. He's the reference.
Dwight's also.
No one else is going to know what that means except us. Three,
yeah.
Us three.
I should say Dwight's also a superstar. He was also in Chasing Daylight.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you utilize a lot of your friends for all these reference shots. And Matt does not, right? Matt is just – is he doing it from a straight –
No, he's got reference too, but
– Oh, he does.
I would say it's a little bit different in that, again, Matt's got way more prowess in what I would call like free form art. Like he can get a sheet of paper and just rip out Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I'd have to take a picture of somebody in the pose.
Yeah.
And well, then work from
and
there.
Like, you know, like John Belotti Jr. in our last episode, he's a Godzilla artist. Check out his work. He did one of his illustrations. He bought Godzilla toys.
Yeah.
And miniature and shot it, and then that was
it.
So that now, you know, I don't want to – I'm still going to sound like a dick. The problem comes that sometimes when you shoot reference, you have to exaggerate the gesture.
Oh, absolutely.
Otherwise, it tends to look a little stiff.
Right. And
a dick.
It's definitely –
I'm just being honest.
I'm just kidding.
No, trust me. I've heard –
That robot is awesome though, by the way.
That looks like a Gundam.
Yeah,
it's very much in that line. So I'd say this has been a learning process for me because this was really technically my second time doing interiors.
Oh,
right. I've learned over the course of this book to push my figures further. And to when we do these reference shots, like the first time around when I shot most of the Samronauts minus Dwight are actually all from a great former improv comedy troupe. Or not improv, I say they're sketch.
Okay.
And they were all friends. I used to be a stand-up comic for like half a second.
Oh, get the fuck out of here.
And really? I used to open for them. Okay. Nice. Honest here. I was a stand-up comic because Eric's previous shop in Lansing.
Yeah.
I was a customer of his. He did a open mic stand-up.
In the shop.
And said, Mark, you should come do it. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I'm a comic now.
I can do that.
Right. I did a handful of gigs.
Stand-up at a comic book store. I'm a fucking comedian.
I did do some other open mics elsewhere.
They do that in the city somewhere.
Everywhere.
They still
best
do that.
Knock-knock joke. Go. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
What was your opening joke?
Oh, come on. Really? I just go out there and say, where are my Jews at?
Oh, shit. That'll bring the house down wherever you go. I'll tell you what.
It works no matter if there's one person or zero.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's only one or zero.
Okay, so the – what were we talking about? The reference.
What the hell were we talking
about? About my shitty stiff art, right?
Yeah, you were talking about how you're being a dick and criticizing guest art.
How is the process? And I think you know what you need to do and how you work on it.
Yeah, I learned. I mean, it was cutting my teeth a bit at a time. So essentially, I would make.
Now, it's not to say it doesn't look great, listener. Definitely pick up the book or buy it. It's awesome. It's a lot of fun. And again,
bunch of money to his Kickstarter.
All ages, so it's great for if younger cousins, your kids, whatever. It's great.
We've established the book's safe.
Yeah.
No. So when we take the reference shots and such, I do a lot more bookending. So I'm like, okay, move your arm a little bit further.
There you go.
And then I'll usually even take it beyond that. So I'll just go one step further. Now, clearly, my style is going to be more realistic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Than Matt's. But in a lot of these cases, what people aren't going to see is that I'm really stitching together multiple poses.
Sure.
So there's one pose in here where the monkey is jumping.
Oh, who's the monkey reference?
It's been five people.
Oh, my God. That's great.
It changed. Every time I get a good monkey, I lose him the next time around.
You need Andy Serkis, if you're listening to this,
for some extra work.
Send us an email, show@jockandnerd.com.
Unpaid? He's your guy.
Yeah. I was about to say, I could afford you for 5 seconds.
And that's all you need. It's Serkis. The man's a genius.
That's true. I've started to learn to be like, okay, pose your upper body, pose your lower body, and I'll stitch.
How about this? Can I suggest another method?
Of course.
High speed shooting frame rate, have the person go through the whole motion.
Oh, we've done it too. That's it.
Because now you're actually capturing the momentum. The person's not holding what's supposed to be motion. Yep. And so they're transferring their body weight, their center of gravity.
It's more natural.
And you see all this in the gesture of the body in the photo.
Absolutely. And so we've tried to build the process.
Nice.
Within the middle of this book, I was able to procure a DSLR.
Nice. There you go. That's what you need. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now that I've got that, and then with each successive shoot that we do with each book, we get more and more fans turned friends that want to come and help.
Yeah.
So last time we did a shoot, I had like three people that had DSLRs.
Nice.
And they're just ringing.
Yeah. So you have lots of coverage from all angles.
Yeah. So we definitely got more. And then, of course, they want to be in the book. So.
Do you find that the art, your guys' art gets better as you go and that you almost want to go back to the beginning and redo stuff?
I want to say we're safe. It's much like obviously you want your consistency to be there. Yeah. I mean, this book is literally the course of 4 years, so you're going to see some improvement. But obviously, we've tried to maintain a level of quality throughout. But I mean, obviously, I think I can. I'm doing more now. Like now, I've got a better idea of where my strengths are and how I can play to them.
It's great,
Because of the woodcut thing, I really like to do stuff that has an insane amount of detail.
That's great.
So like when on our Kickstarter you saw last night, I posted one of my panels. Within there, you'll see like I did the guy's beard. So if you go up to updates, let's see, and then you scroll down and there you go. So drawing that beard.
Dude.
Holy fuck.
That,
right?
Yeah. And that totally, it reminds me of that dude from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. But that's a lot of intricate line work.
Right. So like that's where I know, okay, that's my strength. I'm going to play that up now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe in book one I wasn't so adventurous. Yeah. Now I am.
But I gotta say the combination, the two art styles, really, they complement each other really well. Like it's surprising.
I
love the eyeball guy. I didn't think I was like I didn't think it would work, but looking at it, it's like, and I love this. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not an expert on drawing or comics or anything, but whenever I read comics and there's a different artist in the comic, it's sometimes very jarring.
Yeah. You've said that before. Yeah. And like, I don't like it,
but this,
this is a great example.
It works when it's future and past.
Yeah. Oh, also present and past. What I wanted to say, I love your page layout.
Thank you.
Panel design is so great. Let me go back to the first issue. Just vibrant, exciting, not typical.
Creative.
Very creative. All the way from the beginning, dude. The panel, I really caught my eye. I was like, these panels are great. Like, it's really good use of it. And that's always important. And your splash pages, like, well-paced. Like, I love, look at these panels. Like, it's great.
We were just on your Kickstarter. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
So basically you got three issues. Yeah. You're finishing up the fourth.
Right.
And now this awesome Kickstarter. Let's get into the Kickstarter.
Absolutely. So, like I know we've mentioned before on episode 18, but now we can actually talk about real details.
Yeah.
So we did launch our Kickstarter. When does this drop?
Well, this is going to go up Monday morning. Listener, today we're recording July 3rd. 31st.
We're recording July 31st.
Okay, launched on July 30th.
Okay.
Like way late.
Yesterday.
Like 11:30.
Yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And what we're doing is collecting Curse of the Dreadnoughts. So that's four issues, 150 pages of content, and then we're adding 42 pages of never-seen-before content.
Whoa.
That will include
new stuff?
Well, what we're going to do, it's basically all the bonus. Everything that we can come up with.
Is that where people are getting the other books?
We'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
More fun.
Man, because I really want to read those now, like the way you described it.
Yeah, right.
So the additional pages that we're going to do here, there's going to be a pinup gallery. We've got some great artists. We got Mike Babinski from Star Wars. He does a lot of Star Wars trading cards and stuff.
Wow, nice.
We've got Kristen Gutsnick from Hench Girl. She's kind of a great indie name who's coming up. We've got Don Kramer.
Yeah.
Hopefully you know from him, from Detective Comics and JSA. We've got Dan Doherty, our nemesis, Beardo.
Beardo.
He's actually giving us an 8-page backup. I just talked with him last night about the details. He's going to do an 8-page, never-seen-before backup that will carry on the story and tie into the next Samurnaut book.
Oh, he's doing a whole story.
He's doing a full-on story. I helped him with his Kickstarter. He's helping us with ours.
Wow.
We've got Comic Legends Mike Gold, who is the former group editor from DC Comics during the late 80s and early 90s.
Oh, wow.
How did you get him?
Yeah.
Well, mostly I write professionally for comicmix.com. I'm one of their columnists.
I've seen your articles.
Yeah, I post every Saturday. And Mike Gold is editor-in-chief of Comic Mix. I should also note he founded First Comics in Chicago.
Oh, First. I remember First. They had the Ghostbusters franchise.
They had that. They have Grimjack.
Badger. I think I owned Ghostbusters number one from First Comics from the 80s.
Right. So that was Mike's company. And
They went under, didn't they? Because I wondered about
that. No, they're
back. Oh, they're back.
Now, it's not having anything to do with Mike, but First Comics is still alive and well.
Is still around. Okay.
In fact, I think them and Devils do.
Yeah.
They're in bed.
Yeah. Then one of them, didn't a Chicago company have the G.I. Joe franchise?
Devils do. Yeah.
Property? That was Devils do. Yeah. There's a lot of big comic publishers here.
Yeah. We got a great indie scene. And then outside of Mike, we also have John Ostrander.
Yeah.
So people know him, obviously.
Well, Don Kramer worked on Detective Comics with Paul Dini. He drew Nightwing.
Yep.
JSA.
Is Ostrander, he's big from
Wonder Woman.
Suicide Squad,
yes.
Yeah.
And
wow.
Then John just released or just successfully funded an independent book called I'm going to mess it up now.
We can look it up if you don't want to mess it up.
Please do. Just go there.
There's Comic Mix right there. Comicmix.com. Listener, again, check the show notes. All these links are going to get turned on a lot of cool shit today.
Yes.
Vox.
Yeah. Now, that's his thing.
Oh.
Oh, here we go. It is called Kross. Hollow to the Ground. So that's vampires during Gettysburg.
Nice.
Right. So
it's kind of like an Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, like the other way around.
So to speak, yeah.
And
so they just funded that for him. So John's doing the intro to the book. Mike's doing another essay for us. So between that,
Gets for your Kickstarter, man.
Amen. Calling in every fucking favor
that's
we can
fantastic.
Get.
That's fantastic. Hold on. It gets a couple of these.
Geek Boner.
Oh, shit.
Okay. All right. Drink.
Drink, and then just
– Talking Nerd.
That's two people.
Can you quickly explain for the layman, sort of like me, what Kickstarter even is?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. No, Kickstarter is a crowdfunding platform. So I don't know if jocks really listen to NPR, but are you familiar with NPR?
Yes.
It's more than just three letters put together.
So you know the annoying thing they do like four times a year where they have the pledge drive?
Yeah.
So Kickstarter is NPR's pledge drive, but instead of like boring ass shit.
Well, it's crowdfunding. It's crowdfunding.
It's a way for us to essentially say, I want to put this book together. I don't have the money to print 1,000 books.
Right.
I need everybody's help. So if you give me money, I'll give you gifts. And then if we all – if we reach our goal – everybody wins.
So that's pretty much how it works. Now, they need to reach their goal before a certain date or nobody – they get no money.
Right. So by this time it drops, you're looking at maybe 29 days and we are trying to get to $6,500. Obviously, we'd love to be able to beat that. The new thing – this whole crowdfunding economy thing has just
it's changed.
Become a beast. So
Patreon. We talked about Patreon.
I learned about
I
a lot about
want to do
Kickstarter
that.
On like watching episodes of Shark Tank.
Yeah.
Right. Same idea.
A lot of entrepreneurs use their stuff.
Yep.
And now you can't even be happy with just reaching your goal. Now you have to have stretch goals.
What?
So you can't – it's not enough just to get your goal. You have to be able to entice people to say, look, it would be nice if we got 6,500. If we get to 8,000.
You're going
to
get all this shit.
Yeah. We can do X, Y, and Z. So
listener, you have till Monday, August 31st, 2015, 11:06 p.m. Central Time to back. And I'll tell you what, you'll be happy. This is the very first Kickstarter I backed. I did it earlier today.
So much.
$30. I never did it before and I've heard it. And I was like, you know what? I want in because I want the 30. So what do I get for $30 once it hits?
I believe $30 should give you the printed signed graphic novel.
Ooh, I like signed.
And I think that's it. And of course, we're going to thank you in the back of the book.
Yeah, and the name's in there. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I said that's sort of like the base there.
I'm definitely going to check this out.
You want to talk about some of the other pledge levels? What are people getting?
Yeah, so the base level right now is $15, and that gets you the digital copy. So again, 192 pages for $15.
That's not a bad deal at all.
That's a pretty good deal.
$30 gets you the printed and signed edition. For $45, you're getting the book, a pair of collectible stickers, and 6 buttons.
Cool.
So sort of some good old
and a thank you and all that other stuff.
Everything.
Like everything's cumulative as it goes.
Every book is signed. All this,
I might have to up my pledge.
Oh, we'll get into that.
Talking nerd!
Let's see. Basically, I won't go through all the price levels, but essentially we add a t-shirt.
Yeah.
We add, if you scroll down, this is really cool. We have a 3D printed monkey.
What?
Keep scrolling.
All the way to the bottom?
Keep going. Oh, so there's your buttons.
There's a picture.
There's your stickers,
there's all the stuff. Cool.
There's the print. There's the t-shirt.
The t-shirt's the
wow.
It's Master L!
With removable hat and staff.
Also,
is that Raiden?
it does He's got the hat.
Yeah, wait, also it's hat. All removable. And you could probably paint that however you want.
Yeah, we are selling it in astral projection white.
Oh, nice. That's a good
And you are welcome
that's
paint.
A great paint color. They should sell that.
Astral projection white.
Can you imagine you sell that at Home Depot and it's like an empty bucket? Like it's just – there's nothing in there. Because you're like, hey, it's astral.
And we also, on top of that, you also have the opportunity, if you are a collector, we're selling original pages. Commissioned artwork.
Yeah, commissioned art's always a good
And then
get.
If you are the type who really just has to be in a comic book, our top tier, you can become one of the next Samurai.
Nice. Wow. I see that.
There's a lot of – I mean, there's a lot of value here.
There's a lot of great rewards.
A lot of great
value.
Yeah.
A lot of great rewards, man. It's really fun.
Anything that we have there, basically, if I didn't make a package that you like, you can build your own.
Oh,
so
nice.
We have the add-on price. So, for example, my mother says, I just want a t-shirt. Okay, you can do that.
Yeah.
So we have all that running through. And then, of course, this is my funny thing. So every Kickstarter has to have that what I would call stupid prize that is a ridiculous amount of money. That
the one
that
you'll never get. Right. You should put it up there. What is yours? Is
for $1,000,
okay.
We committed you can either take video of shaving Unshaven Comics and lording over us. You can have Matt make you a brisket basted in his own tears. Or you can have Kyle come pitch whatever you want him to for 30 minutes.
Oh, wait, he'll what will Kyle do?
Basically, for example, if you guys did this, you could make him do a half an hour podcast where all he does is talk about how great you guys are.
How much money do you have on you, Anthony?
Start your own Kickstarter to Kickstarter.
$1,000.
I'm gonna have to start a Kickstarter to pledge to their fucking Kickstarter.
Here's the thing. I came into this show and I wildly unprepared as usual.
Yeah.
I looked at
no surprise there.
Jockey Nerd.
Rug Boy would not be. Yeah.
I looked at the. I wasn't familiar with all the rewards on your Kickstarter. You're doing a very good job of selling me. No kiss ass whatsoever. This is actually a lot of good value.
Yeah. The buttons are fun and it's just great.
And we've
great
got some.
Stuff.
And trust me, we've got over the next 30 days, we're going to be releasing more art, new stickers. We have two more designs to do.
So the whole part of the strategy is you got to put shit out every day. To keep it up in people's minds.
Well,
so your guy's job is to pound the pavement for the next 30 days.
Yep. This is
so you're out selling basically.
Essentially, yeah. For me, like the next 30 days, I am a walking, talking campaign.
I'm trying
very hard to walk that balance because I still have a life, family, friends, and all that. So
plus, it gets wearing after a while,
right? And I've been on the other side of that,
yeah.
So I know as a fan, I don't want to be pitched a million times,
right?
But you know, I think amongst all of our indie brethren, we understand.
Yeah,
like when you're in the middle of this, you got to get your work done. You got to lean in and get it done. The good thing is for us right now, there's not a lot of shows that we're a part of. We have Wizard World at the end of the month.
Okay.
And you'll probably be there pitching.
We will be at the Comic Mix table.
Okay.
We're sort of partnering with them on this.
Oh, cool.
I should also plug, we're printing with Kraken Printings.
And that'll be right about towards the end of the campaign.
So that'll be like a big 20 push. Second,
That we'll see where we're at. Obviously, we have a lot of hope here. I can say as a proprietor of a Kickstarter, my email has just been blown up with people who want my money.
But the beauty of like one thing you could do also in Kickstarter and Patreon is people back each other.
Yep.
Patreon projects will podcast will bag will pledge other podcasts and they get a return. Same thing with Kickstarter. You find because there are tons of independent comic books on Kickstarter right now you can back.
Yes, and I mean,
but don't back any
of
them.
Back this
back
one.
Fucking Samurai.
Well, here I'm going to
they're a
I'm
go.
Sweeten the pot.
They are go. Yeah.
There
we go. Oh boy, let's go.
Okay. So it sounded like you guys and maybe your listeners like disposable razors. It sounds like something you'd want to get into. So here's what I'm saying. If you guys back our Kickstarter campaign, at the end of the campaign, you get a survey. I'm going to be putting a question in there. Where did you hear about the campaign?
Okay.
If you put Jock and Nerd, I will include for all pledges a copy of Disposable Razors 1 and 2.
Oh nice.
Jock and Nerd.
I fucking love that. So listener, back – the Kickstarter.
Yes.
You could do it at the lowest, at the minimum, at the highest, whatever. And then they'll get a survey. Just tell them you heard it here. And you are going to get all the, what did you say, disposable razors?
Disposable razors 1 and 2. So get that Chasing Daylight story and the Ironside
story. Nice.
You're going to get those for absolutely no extra cost
to
you.
That's fantastic.
Our show actually has value now.
Wow, we're actually providing something of substance for
we're
once.
We're actually providing like
I
a
just, I
you get a reward for listening
instead
to our show.
Of just taking up space. And
instead of us ruining your brain and making it turn into mush,
listener,
you actually have value now.
Listener, thanks for spending time with us because we know that there's a lot of podcasts and not a lot of time, but it's finally paid off.
Talking Nerd.
You're going to get something.
Yeah,
I love it. Thank
that's
you.
Awesome.
That's a great idea.
That's
it's a great
awesome.
Idea. We are going to – we'll continue to plug it a couple times a week. Get it out there. Tell them to say you heard it here. Actually, no. That's only on the podcast. I'm not telling anyone that on social media. You have to listen to this show to get the free shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But we will plug it and retweet everything. Yeah. So what's your strategy? Are you going to like ramp it up through the end of the week? The month, I mean?
I mean, my idea right now is that we'll post a daily update, just some piece of art or – maybe video of Matt and myself, since he still lives in the same town. So he and I work together on Fridays and Sundays. So we're just going to get a wealth of material. As I get the pinups from Don and Mikey and Kristen, we're going to post those.
Nice.
And then at 25% funded, 50, 75, we're going to start talking about stretch goals.
Okay.
So I've got some.
So you
extra,
have those in mind.
Yeah. I have more artists who want to do stuff.
Yeah.
Basically, like, the reason why you do stretch goals is like, okay, if I can get X amount of dollars, I can afford to add X, Y, and Z.
Okay.
So,
right. That's like Patreon. And listener, go watch their video. It's a lot of fun. It was just neat seeing that video that you guys made before episode 18. Like, everything's coming full circle.
For us, especially because we were there.
We
when
were
you
watching.
It,
yeah.
And now I just saw the video and I'm like, wow, that's.
And then
awesome.
He does like his Dusty Roads on our episode. And then you'll see when you watch the video why that started.
We could not include
No, that's, that
so.
Part is hilarious. No,
well, he was having so much trouble getting that pitch out, and then we were like, just do it in the Dusty voice, and then he was so much more comfortable.
It just came out. Yeah, it was really natural to say, like, Matt did not get an A in speech class. So that's why you see, like, and again, I tried heavily not to be in the video for the whole damn thing.
I remember how much he was struggling.
Yeah, he was struggling with that thing.
That Dusty Rhodes just freed him up. Like, it just flew. It flew out of him. The spirit flew out of him. And that was the best, that was his best take.
That was the best pitch he did the whole time.
It's like you guys say, you love the live format feel. You love that. You can't capture that in the pre-recorded stuff. So this is the same notions. Like, as soon as he opened up, I was like, you're using that.
You got to throw that in because it's sincere.
Well, plus it gets his personality out there. And anytime you can connect with someone that is trying to sell you something, you're more likely to buy. I only know that because I work in sales.
And I'm glad you said that because that episode 18 in this show, your stories are – they're selling me on the book. And hopefully they're selling the listener because really this is – you guys, this is passion. You hear it. This is 20 years of friendship and work coming together and you say it in the video. But you hear it in your stories and they're it's great.
I appreciate it. I said it's the notion that people always asked us about like when we're at these shows. They're like, well, why aren't you in the comic shops right now? I know we talked about that a little bit in 18, but
yeah, Diamond Distributors, all that fucking garbage.
Right. But I mean, the long and short of it is that, unless you really heard that story, I mean, again, the pitch is cool. We understand that. But unless the comic shop guy has that pitch in his pocket,
it means nothing.
People are going to flip through it and they might have a notion, but they're not going to really. Again, I can't compete with Batman and I'm not going to try. But if I have a chance to pitch people in person, it's going to work.
And luckily, we're living in an age where you can do this virtually now.
Exactly.
You're pitching all our listeners in person. They're getting to know you just like we're getting to know you. And it's awesome.
Please get your hand off my thigh, guys.
Hey, where is your other hand?
Oh, shit.
That's not a pillow.
I thought that was my thigh. I thought that was my kneecap.
You guys also had a podcast.
We did.
You had 169 episodes of a podcast, sir, that you neglected to mention.
Can I be fair? We had way more than that.
Wow.
We had about 250.
Dude, these guys are vets, dude.
I know. We should be learning from this guy.
We have 29.
No.
When we started.
What was your podcast about?
This is also – it's on their website, unshavingcomicsonline.com. You can find it.
It's – I mean, not really dissimilar from you guys. Essentially, what we started with was – at the time when we formed, we had the website and we're like, we need content. You can't make new pictures every day if you're making comic books every day.
Yeah.
So I was like, how about every week we just show up in my basement and we record.
Yeah.
We go over what happened in comics this week. And then we had a rotating bandy of like Kyle would review a book. I'd review a book.
That's great.
We had signature rant sessions. We had – by the end of it, the reason why we ended up stopping is essentially what I would do is I dedicate the last – 20 minutes of the show, I would literally post an hour before the show. I'd go to Facebook and I'm like, anybody who writes anything
– gets in the show.
Gets in the show.
Oh, that's a great
idea. And I was like, look, if you ask a question, we'll answer it.
Did that work?
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it was the same. It was mostly the same people.
Yeah.
But it got to be so damn funny.
Yeah.
Because actually, I'll plug him. Our super fan, Brandon Wenzel, this awesome dude, literally just started picking up. He's like, oh my God, these guys put me on their podcast every time. And he would just go nuts. So our final episode, I challenged him. It was episode 169. I challenged him to ask – to leave questions, comments, or shameless plugs for 169 notes, and he did it.
What?
Wow.
In an hour. And we read all of them.
Oh, my God.
So we did
– And this was just this April.
Yeah. And it's at that point in time, Kyle moved up to Kenosha. So it was one of those things where either I had to buy a rig like this and figure out how to get him to Skype and make it sound good.
Yeah. Or it's very easy.
I know. Or it could be – we could basically say we could actually finish the damn book.
Yeah. And now,
priorities.
What are your thoughts of firing this baby up again?
Because Imran plugs every guy to get their own podcast. I mean, but you already had one. He doesn't have to sell you.
No, they have a built-in audience. Yeah. They're just waiting, dying, probably waiting.
Let's say we'll see how the Kickstarter goes if we have a really cool reaction from that. And maybe I'll throw that as a question to people and see if that's something they'd like to – if they want to hear our opinions every week and see how surly we can actually be, I'm more than happy to
share. Honestly, though, I'd rather hear about your guys' background and the process – of making an independent comic book company and what it takes.
Yeah, and we definitely cover that quite a bit. We did get some great questions from people all the time about, like, literally, we have gone through soup to nuts, concept to completion, idea to printed page, how we've done what we've done. So nothing we've ever done is a secret.
Yeah,
there is no secret sauce aside from the book itself.
Yeah, no, that's great.
And if you put a monkey in your goddamn book, I will hunt you. I have a set of skills.
All right, Liam Neeson.
Who are so yeah? Get the podcast up when you can. I mean, I like because you do have a built-in audience. You guys know what you're doing, and we'd be glad to help with. I know you asked like what we were using and stuff, and
anything we can do to help. Imran would be glad to fill you all in on that.
I mean, we might have to call that the Jock and Nerd stretch goal. Right?
Oh shit!
Jock and Nerd.
There we go.
That's the perfect opportunity for me to say like. For the right amount of money over the $6,500, we could afford a rig that would allow us to do more
stretch goal. There's your stretch goal. I love it. I love it.
Do you want to hear us talk? Give us more money.
I want to hear about the making of a comic book. I want to hear what it takes and you know, little bits about what you guys go through and coming up with ideas and just fucking brainstorming.
I could give you a great example of being right in the thick of it. So every time we make these books now, this is our – 7th time making a comic. This is my 5th time doing photos. I invariably, inevitably miss a photo or don't get a reference because at the time in my head, I'm like, oh, this is so fucking easy. I'll just do blank, blank, blank.
Yeah.
Well, cut 6 months later and I'm sitting there looking at my scribble going, what was I doing there? So there is a panel in issue 4 where Black Star and the Ship Witch are walking down one of the giant tentacles. That's how they exit their ship is down
awesome.
Giant tentacles.
That's awesome.
So they're walking down, and it's a cool shot. So all you see are his boots, Black Star's boots, walking on the metal plank and dragging the monkey behind him.
Oh.
And I was like, that's really fucking cool. Now, at the time, I think I told myself, well, clearly I can just draw a boot.
Yeah.
Well, clearly I can't. So I'm sitting there going, oh, God, what am I supposed to do? So what I ended up doing is I grabbed Matt and I said, Matt, I need you to go with me. I mean, I don't need him to wear a boot. I just need the position of the legs and stuff because you got to make it look right.
Yeah.
So he stood on a children's slide because it's got the angle I want.
Oh, like the tentacle.
So it's basically nice. Like half the book. I can just – any panel you pick out, I can be like, that's actually Matt's hands.
Yeah, I love that
that's
shit, dude.
This guy.
Like when Dwight told me because when I went to get the comics on Wednesday, Dwight's like, oh, yeah, I'm the Purple Salmon out of the book. I was like, I love that behind awesome. The scenes.
And I will even go so far as to admit like with the Samronaut too, especially – and this is part of the reward. If you become a Samronaut, I kind of use the personality of the person.
Oh, nice.
Mm. So – Dwight's, let's say, inner snarkiness made him the perfect hooker with a heart of gold.
Yeah, like in the beginning of the second issue, at the end of the first issue, well, should I spoil? I don't
know. Go right ahead. No, it's such a trope.
He takes off. He's like, fuck you guys, I'm out.
It's right. The typical Raphael, fuck you, I quit.
Yes.
The Samurai is all about taking those tropes and then turning them on their ear.
And then the beginning of the second issue, we catch up with him on the bike, and he's got an inner monologue, and he's like...
Who was your favorite Ninja Turtle? Now that you bring
Leonardo.
Up. Leonardo? Me too.
Leonardo had the bow.
No, the swords.
The katanas.
Katanas,
oh, yeah. The swords. Right,
he was the leader.
He was a leader.
That's right. I'm getting them confused.
And him and Rafi would always bash.
Though, I mean, like, it was so unfair because, like... I look down on people who like Donatello the most.
Why?
He was like,
because he was this nerd.
It's just like, well, everyone wants to fail safe, and they're like, he's the gadget guy. I'm like, he didn't fight the Foot Clan with gadgets.
No,
he fought them with a broomstick.
Yeah,
I was like,
at least Leonardo's got swords.
At the end of the day, Leonardo had
size are
two
cool though.
Large, sharp.
Yeah.
Objects.
Yeah.
Michelangelo had nunchucks that look better than they actually act.
Yeah.
Raphael had a pointed weapon.
Yeah. Yeah, Raphael at least had a pointed weapon. But you're right. Leonardo had the best. Like, you can't sword for close-up fighting and two of them. You can't fucking beat that shit.
Right. Exactly.
Leonardo, well, he was – my middle name is Leonard. So that's part of the reason. But I always liked him because he was the leader and he, like
– I'm going
to call you Al.
I was early enough, young enough to say color blue was my favorite, so of course, and I like the leaders. But like we do take some of those tropes. So the Red Samurai Lancer is sort of a Leonardo clone in that he's like the lantern jawed, you know, go to leader. But again, the hook of the character is that secretly he sucks. He's not really that great.
He's not
a leader.
That good.
It's a
this
set.
Is great. Yeah,
and
it's
he's got
great,
inferiority. Comics.
The writing, listener, the writing is really good. Like, and it is a great mix of. Stuff you loved, if you love that.
So we got fun hooks for everybody. Like the Purple Samurai, the hook is his father was a Samurai.
Oh, cool.
His father was the Red Samurai, the leader of the gang. So can you imagine being the son and you don't get to lead the team?
Oh, so he's got an inferiority thing.
He's the little bitter.
He's got a chip on his shoulder.
He's a little bitter there.
No wonder he quits.
Yeah, he's like, fuck you guys.
Yep.
I want an R-rated Samronauts just for me. How much money do I got to fucking play?
Oh, shit.
Samronauty.
There we go. Oh, the fucking,
is that an R-rated or is that an X-rated? Yeah.
Well, let's say, whatever.
Talking nerd.
I got the money. So, we'll listener, talk. Basically, check the show notes. Yes. They'll be right in your podcast app or jockandnerd.com/29. Click on the Kickstarter. Watch the video. And help out some awesome independent creators, because this is how good art gets made. It's funded by us.
What was that, FUBU?
For us, by us.
Yes, it is.
I should
trademark that. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Samronauts. They're like the jeans that you shouldn't wear.
Exactly.
And I should say, like, the best thing about Kickstarter, please, if you do back us, please share it. I should have,
but like right when you back it, it's like tweet Facebook this and right. like that, and it just grows. But it is,
it's okay, but like I much rather say, like, because I'm in marketing during the day.
Yeah.
I would much rather somebody make a Facebook post about it and actually tag someone who actually would do something
Absolutely.
About it.
Right. Absolutely.
Because otherwise you're just sort of yelling in the ether. And let's be honest, when my friends say, I backed blah, 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 I'm like, good for you.
Listen, just like I'm kind of marketing, and just like podcasting, like comic books, you got to go to where your audience is.
Right.
You identify your audience, and you go like this show, like where the audience, like the show is made for people like us.
Right.
Someone like us would love the Samronauts.
Can you
want to hang out? And,
yeah, I was going to say, can you stick around?
We got
a lot of news segments. We'd like your surly opinion on
what's going on. We still got a bunch of shit to go through
in the universe. Yeah, let me fire up the snark engine. I'm good.
All right, he's shifting from guest to host, people.
The Jock and Nerd Podcast.
All right, we have a lot of fun geek news to go over that's got me all
geek boner
all day long. And it's not just Marvel news. There's actual DC news. We've been kind of like Marvel heavy, and we're like, man, we should really talk about some DC shit. But if you listen to the show, we're still
we promised
on the Batman versus
we
Superman.
We promised the listener that we would talk about DC stuff, and I feel like this news segment we will talk.
Well, okay, can I put on my eyeliner first?
Of course. And
is that a reference to how serious and emo these movies, the DC movies, are going to be?
They are super serial.
They're so serious. But before we get to that, we got to talk about my guy. Fucking Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
Marvel's Spider-Man reboot. I'm sure you keep up on some of this. Mark, listener, if you've been listening to us, you know we talked about how Tom Holland's been cast. Great, young guy. He's going to be really young Peter. Marissa Tomei as Aunt May. We have John Watts directing, who this motherfucker just has a movie in Sundance. Mm-hmm. Like, and now he's got Spider-Man. Like, that is a filmmaker's dream come true.
And this is Marvel canon.
This is the first Marvel MCU Spider-Man. Yep. Super. Yep. I mean, I am more excited for this than Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. Than actually seeing Spider-Man.
Are you that? Yes. You're that much? You're more excited?
Yes. Wow. Is that possible?
I didn't think it would be because,
man, I was
Tobey Maguire. You're creaming your pants.
Holy crap! I was like. Because think about it. You never saw a guy swing through Manhattan on a line in a movie. You never saw that shit. And they did it really good.
It still holds up.
Holy shit, there's a guy swinging. But this gets me more excited because this is closer to the root of who created the character, where the character lies, where he should have started anyways. You know, Stan had to sell all these properties back in the day so they wouldn't go fucking bankrupt.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of a necessity.
The movie rights.
I don't blame him. And it was smart. He's like, I need money. I just got to sell the fucking rights to this. And it helped keep Marvel afloat. Anyways, we didn't know who was writing the Spider-Man. Well, listener, now we know. John Francis Daly and Jonathan M. Goldstein have confirmed that they are writing, that they're a duo. Now, they've written, you might know the name John Francis Daly. He was, if you were fans of Freaks and Geeks, this is a perfect pairing. He was Sam Weir in Freaks and Geeks.
Right.
He's currently on Bones, but he was Peter Parker. Like, that is Peter Parker. Like, he was the geek. And now he's grown up. He's done a lot of writing. They both wrote Horrible Bosses, Horrible Bosses 2. Currently, they co-wrote and directed the current new Vacation movie that's come out. And they have a great comedy background. You know how Kevin Feige, he said he wants a John Hughes type of movie. And John Hughes also created the Vacation franchise. So there's a lot of these great tie-ins. These two dudes, they actually put in a bid to direct the movie. Mm-hmm. And then when they didn't get it, they're like, oh, okay, oh well. But then they're like, you know what? We want you, because they had like a great pitch and all the story. They're like, we want you guys to write it. Like, it's awesome. So it's going to be an action comedy.
The writers are just as important as
absolutely. So far, the pieces they put together for this has got me super
geek boner.
Fucking Spider-Man. It's a, so John.
How big of a Spider-Man guy are you, Mark?
I'd say, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being obviously Imran.
Yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah, bias whatsoever with Imran.
Right. I'd say I'm probably a solid 6.5.
Oh, that's okay. Good. That's good. And I think that's going to be good. So, I mean, again, we know there's going to be no origin. It's a really young Peter Parker in high school, which is great.
I saw some of the details on what the script or yeah. How it's
so
going to be.
So, genre-wise, this is going to be – I'm calling this action comedy.
Yeah.
So it's another awesome genre that they – like kind of like Ant-Man, but well, now
– all the Marvel films are sort of action comedy.
Oh, there's certainly – I would say, though, with this like the bent has got to be – Spider-Man always inherently should have humor.
Yes.
Like if I can be, dare I say, critical of the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
Of course. No, but I'll agree with what you're going to say. I know what you're going to say.
Very, very sad.
Yeah, very sad humorless.
yeah, he was always kind of sad in those movies.
What they need to do is combine put Garfield in a Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie.
Actually, I was going to say, you know what they got wrong?
Yeah.
Topher Grace would have been a better Peter Parker.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, I never liked that choice of Eddie Brock.
Why was he Eddie Brock?
I don't know. He would have been a way better. He's got that quick, witty, snarky, and he can play geek.
Well, you need to find the balance because Spider-Man has a lot of heartbreak, but then he has a lot of humor. So you need to find that.
Which
balance.
Is why I didn't like Andrew Garfield. I thought he was too hot and cool to be Peter. Like, you need that little balance.
There was a bit. I think, with the Amazing Spider-Man, I think they were just having their own geek boner over the technology. Yeah, and
geek boner!
Yeah. I didn't watch Amazing Spider-Man 2, but I watched the movie Sins version, and I was like,
"That's good. That's all you need."
I don't need to see it anymore. Actually, the funny thing is, like, I really did actually like Amazing Spider-Man, the first one. I thought that my only issue with that movie, honestly, was that the lizard got like his like plan was just boom. Like, oh, I'm a lizard guy. I need to make more lizard guys. Right. Like, was this always the plan?
Did he know he was going to be a lizard guy?
Why did you turn crazy that
and Dennis Leary.
Pretty quick. Yeah. And again, like the sewer layer
Why is that your plan to just make more lizards?
Like, he wants to propagate the earth. I don't know.
It just sort of seemed like he had that one in the can, like sort of ready. But no, I guess when I saw Amazing Spider-Man 2, the previews and whatnot, Paul Giamatti is Rhino. I'm like, I don't really understand that, but
that actually kind of worked.
I like Paul Giamatti. Yeah. And I'm like, he'll make that work. But then basically as soon as Jamie Foxx, like as soon as he's like, I'm Electro, I'm like, and I'm out.
We talked about this two shows ago where we were just like, Jamie Foxx was channeling his best like Joel Schumacher Batman and Robin.
It was like a Joel Schumacher.
He watched
almost.
Jim Carrey as Riddler and he's like, I can do that.
I mean, I own this movie on DVD still in the fucking cellophane. I never opened it.
Why do you own it? Item.
Because I have to own all the movies.
Yeah.
Just the fact that there's 5 live-action Spider-Man movies.
You vote with your dollar, and he's saying, I vote for Spider-Man, good or bad.
Good or bad, I will vote for Spider-Man. Now, rumor patrol on Spider-Man continues. Scroll this bit is very interesting. Mm-hmm. Screen Rant has a report. Again, this will be a link in the show notes. Latino Review apparently has shared an image that they originally claimed was concept art drawn for the costume from a description in Captain America Civil War. What it actually is, it's this dude, Spike SDM on DeviantArt. Yeah. But they are saying that somebody at the studio found this, and this is what they kind of use to base it. So, Anthony, you want to describe this costume?
It looks like something a teenager would do, finally.
Yeah, it's very homegrown.
It looks like a hoodie with some goggles over the hoodie that's covering his face. Yeah. There's a Spider-Man logo on the hoodie itself, but not like the webbing or anything. And then he's got knee pads, and it looks like he's wearing like tights actually. But he's got like feet, or his feet are wrapped in tape like the Foot Clan.
Yeah, and the foot is exposed, and he has elbow pads, knee pads, and like the cutoff gloves,
like the workout gloves.
And
it looks like he might have a backpack on.
Let me tell you why I like this. Because in all the movies, I never understood. Okay, so you're a geek, you're a nerd, you're a smart guy, you got spider powers, fine. How the fuck do you know how to sew a goddamn costume and design it all of a sudden? Like Toby's sitting there sketching? Oh, you're an artist too? Oh, that's great. And they're really good drawings. Yeah. They were like they sent it over for Marvel. Like Todd McFarlane drew the shit and Toby, you could draw now, and now you're sewing the fucking thing together?
Well, at least to be fair, he had not been laid ever.
That's a good point. True. He had a lot of free time on his hands, and he probably took home ec class to kind of get with girls, but then was too scared to actually talk to the girls and learn how to fucking use a sewing.
At least Garfield, though, his character, the way they wrote him, he designed that Spider-Man costume, but then he had to look up on YouTube how to run a battery.
Yeah.
Right.
How do batteries work?
So this this is like a homegrown. So it's red and black.
Red and black, which is originally how Spider-Man was drawn.
Yeah, basically because like they use blue for highlight we talked about. But this also ties into that fake, not fake, Russo Brothers possibly Twitter account. Have you seen that?
No.
There's a bunch. So there's like the Russo Brothers who directed Captain America. They apparently there's a Twitter account, but
no one knows if it's actually them.
But James Gunn and people know them say they do not Twitter. But then they've been posting photos, and one of it was like a red and black fabric, and one of it was like these goggles that on red sort of that like, looked just like this. That. Yeah. So now I'm like, maybe that was the fucking costume. It's all very confusing.
What do you think of this costume?
As a
first Spider-Man,
I guess the only thing that shouts to me is context. Yeah. You know, obviously the Spider-Man, the suit, we're supposed to assume that it's so thin at the glove and foot level that he can stick.
Yeah.
Clearly they're trying to make work in that.
Yeah.
They're trying to say like, okay, clearly he doesn't have that around.
His fingers are exposed and his feet are exposed.
Yeah. It's an interesting design. Like it's sort of like if Spider-Man were a teenager and into MMA.
Yeah.
That's sort of the feeling. I said,
but that goes back to the his origin with the wrestling bit.
Yeah. I said, I don't hate it. It's just like, I would much rather see, like, how is it going to look in live action? Will it play? Now, if they came out and said, for the Spider-Man movie, this is the final costume, I might be a little skeptical.
Now, of course, this is going to be like an early version before.
Well, I got an example of how Marvel's already done this.
Yeah.
Captain America's costume is very practical. It looks the way they did it in the first Avenger and the way they've gone back to it.
Yeah.
And when they went to the classic costume in Avenger, they looked really cheesy on screen.
Yeah, I did kind of like, why'd you go back to
that? The more practical look, even though it's not the classic comic look,
the one
looks
that's
better
darker
on screen.
Blue.
I'm saying like with the pads and like the straps, straps create the flag on
his. The more military one.
The more military one. Well, like on the first Avenger 2, they like alluded to the fact that the costume was so like not practical with it being a prop costume that he was wearing and then doing like commercials in.
Look how far we've come though. Remember in the X-Men where Wolverine's like, what are we going to wear? Purple and yellow spandex?
Oh, yeah,
and it was all about being realistic and they call that. Look at how far it's fucking come where they're now embracing
the
shit.
Well, it was weird when the early superhero movies came out, they thought being realistic was like leather.
Yeah. It was like
wearing dark leather.
It's very dominatrix. Yeah.
I just want to make sure if I'm going to fight crime, I can't move.
No, I don't want to move at all. I don't want to have to move my head.
But I want to look
or
good.
Rotate my head around. Yeah. So this art, I want to give credit to this guy. His name is Pietro Scola de Mambro, and it's actually a couple years old. It's a great piece. It reminds me of Spider-Man Noir.
Right, with the heavy goggles.
With the goggles. Mm-hmm. And Spider-Man Noir is like an alternate universe, Depression era Spidey, who's kind of a thug, and he uses
looks like a steampunk.
Yeah, it's very steampunk, and he uses fucking guns, dude. He uses machine guns, and so in Spider-Verse, he's back in after the Secret Wars, and he's got guns, and he's just like a no nonsense. He's like so not Peter Parker. He is a no nonsense thug. Just like he's awesome. He's actually kind of awesome.
Hmm. Well, they like to ramp up. Spider-Man can go that way.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. This alternate take on him was great. And then there's also this little screenshot of a cast list, which honestly, anybody could type this up and take a picture of it.
Oh, yeah, I heard about this.
Like, this has been floating around Reddit and Imgur for a while.
Right.
But
I already hate one of the cast.
Some of the names, I mean, it's kind of interesting. Like, this
Robert Downey Jr.
This article here actually has pictures of these people. The thing is, the validity, even if some of the names are right, someone could just fucking type the name and take a picture of it. So it says here, it starts out Peter Parker, Tom Holland, confirm, obviously. Adrian Toomes / the Vulture, Billy Zane.
Hey, good for him. He needs work.
You know what? I'm okay with that.
People are okay
fucking
with that.
Bring Billy Zane back.
I'm not too familiar with his work, But I've
Who's the Phantom? Titanic?
Oh, yeah, Billy Zane. Okay, now I know what you're talking
bald
about.
Bald guy?
But everyone, and I would say that's a fine
and
casting.
As Yeah, and as like a young, like, ultimate version of...
Billy Zane's not that young.
Well, he's... But, I mean, Adrian Toomes is an old man.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So he would be a younger Vulture.
But except that the bent of the character is that the suit allows him to steal youth.
Yeah.
So they would end up basically, like, splitting the difference.
Yeah, how would they do that? That's true. He was an old man who,
well, they've
like,
got the tech now.
Yeah.
They can age you. They can make you small. They can make you big.
That's true. They got PIM particles.
Right.
Yeah.
And cross particles.
The next cast.
This one's ridiculous. Like. Mac Gargan, who's the Scorpion. Jason Biggs.
Pie
American
fucker.
Pie.
Yeah, he's the pie fucker.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
I don't understand that one.
And the lost voice of Leonardo on Nickelodeon's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, there was a Nick. I don't think I ever saw the Nick version.
Still out, man.
Oh, it is still out.
Fucking great.
Did he do the...
He was Leonardo until he quit, and now Seth Green is.
Oh, Seth Green does a lot of voiceovers.
Voice acting. Yeah. The funny part is, though, Jason Biggs sounds nothing like Seth Green, right?
Yeah.
So in the show, not to digress too much, the way they played
it out...
How
do they explain this?
Leonardo got the tar beat out of him so hard, and they showed the Foot Clan beating his neck.
And it changed his voice
and
pattern.
And he couldn't talk. So for an episode, he's like... And then by the next time, it's all of a sudden Seth Green.
But did they...
That's
a
good explanation.
Did they talk about it? When they were like, oh, your voice is all different after that beatdown.
He basically said, he's like, it's still me, guys. It's still me.
That's not bad. That's not bad. Because kids are going to be confused.
At least they acknowledge
it. Yeah, kids are going to be like, what the fuck? Why does he sound different?
But it is a great voice cast, by the way. I would plug that all the up and down.
I'll have to check that out.
It's so much better than the original cartoon.
Yeah, well, the original one was pretty cheesy
campy,
90s.
Yeah, yeah, this is clearly people our age who love the property trying to make it good.
Nice. I did like the black and white CGI.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Right. Anyway.
So Jason Biggs, fuck off with that.
No
it
way.
Says Aunt May, Marissa Tomei. Who would be a good Scorpion, by the way?
Anybody but Jason Biggs.
Okay, moving on. Yeah.
I mean, what can you explain to me, Ivan, what is Scorpion's character
well,
like?
Well, so he's kind of like a thug.
Angry, muscular guy.
Angry, low-level bank robber criminal. But his suit is – it's armor.
Yeah.
He's got this awesome
tail. I know what he looks like. I just didn't know what his
Yeah, he's kind of – he's not
like.
The brightest – He gets used a lot, but...
So he's like a jock sort of thing.
Yeah, he's kind of
like...
So
why would you chase Jason Biggs?
No, I don't know. That's stupid.
Yeah, I would have a hard time believing it unless, again, you never know how they write these
things. He's goofy, but like not that way.
Jason Biggs is nerdy.
Yeah, like, he's not nerdy. Goofy like that.
I would sooner take the jock who played Oz in American Pie or Stifler over him.
That's
over
what
him.
I was thinking.
Yeah,
I think,
you need like an asshole guy almost.
Right, if you're going to go that route. Yeah. But again, I mean, they could change the character up, right?
Yeah.
What this reveals, though, two villains in the first movie?
It's like anything else, right? You could have someone who's just there for the cold open.
Yeah. You could just introduce the name, the character, instead of having him in there. And it says Tony Stark is in this, Robert Downey Jr., obviously.
That's sort of why I'm starting to have a hard time believing this list.
Right? Mary Jane Fox is Rachel G. Fox. This is her.
Okay.
She's a 19-year-old actress, has literally not been in anything. And then it goes on to say Timothy Chalamet as Harry Osborn.
Okay.
He kind of looks like a Harry Osborn guy. He was the rich kid who ran over a guy in Homeland. I don't know. I haven't watched Homeland. Right. Liz Allen, Sammy Gale. Do we have her picture?
Whoa.
Oh, who the hell
she's
that?
In Blue Bloods.
That's a bad picture
ever. Yeah, Liz Allen. And then
Flash.
Jacob Lattimore as Flash. Now, Jacob is an African-American, which.
It's fine.
He would work.
Flash Thompson doesn't need to be white.
No, doesn't need to be white. And then Miranda Cosgrove as Betty Brant.
Okay.
That's the little girl from School of Rock.
Yeah, though she's been in a lot of things.
Yeah, she's in a lot of Disney and Nick. And she's grown up. Like, right. I think she's an adult now.
It's quite a young cast.
Yeah. Adult-ish. And then, well, the whole.
But I saw the other name. Don't skip over it.
Yeah.
My man.
Hugh Laurie?
As J. Jonah Jameson?
No. J.K. Simmons all the way.
There's no way they're going to have him back.
Why not?
Because it'd just be confusing.
Who was Jonah in a minute? Was there? No, there was no
there
Daily
no
Bugle.
No.
Why? Well, if they want to separate it from... Okay, I don't know. Hugh Laurie is J.J. I mean,
love when you grab the mic and you start singing as you're doing the podcast.
He could pull it off. That's my rock star. he could pull it off. I'll give him that much.
What? Yeah, he could play a dick? I'm sure he can.
Yeah.
He did it for 6 years.
But J.K. Simmons, you can't top that performance.
Well, right. But, I mean, again, he made it.
Yeah.
He made that what it was.
Yeah.
But
you
remember, like, the 90s cartoon, right? That was... Ed Asner
was, and not only in the 90s, if you go back, listen to our episode 16, I take you through the history of Spider-Man on a small screen, Ed Asner was like Uncle Ben and J. Jonah on several shows throughout several decades.
Right.
He was in everything.
He's awesome. And then it goes on to say Forrest Whitaker is Robbie Robertson. That
who's Robbie? I don't know who that is.
Robbie is so Jonah was the reactionary fucking hot-headed editor.
Yeah.
Robbie was kind of his counter.
Oh, okay.
He would always be trying to calm him down, get to the real story.
I like Forest Whitaker.
Forest Whitaker is great. Yeah. That works. Betty Brant, Miranda Cosgrove will be said.
And that would be right in line with Marvel casting really talented guys in like lesser roles. They're not in the main role.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They, always, they get these really talented names and they put them
and
in the
And then this dude,
role.
Tyler Posey, as Ned Leeds.
Ned Leeds is...
Now, Ned Leeds is another huge character.
Oh, he's Hobgoblin.
Yes. He was a writer for the paper who becomes Hobgoblin.
Too much.
Yeah, that's a lot.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah. Now, but if they're going the ultimate, kind of like the ultimate universe, even like the cartoon route, you could kind of introduce these as his world.
And yeah, that, it could that, be like his right. world, and then but they're not all fully developed into
exactly.
villains.
Just kind of like how the Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon was. Like in that first episode, you met everyone when they were younger. Like
one,
you heard
one
their
of,
names.
If not the best Spider-Man cartoon.
Talking nerd! God damn, I knew I liked this guy for a reason.
Yeah. I've written articles on
this. You hear that, Peter Kendall? It's not Ultimate Spider-Man. Our buddy Peter Kendall, who's on another podcast he's been on, he likes Ultimate Spider-Man.
You know, my mama said, if you can't say nothing nice.
I'll say it. Ultimate Spider-Man sucks.
I love Spectacular Spider-Man. Absolutely. I think the best version of Spider-Man on any screen. Still.
Absolutely, yeah.
Still.
Ultimate Spider-Man, I basically like when Paul Dini's name was attached to it, right? And Batman animated series for me.
Spectacular Spider-Man.
No.
Ultimate? Paul Dini was attached to Ultimate?
Yes.
Oh.
He is creative consultant.
Oh.
When I saw that, Bruce Timm, Batman animated series is my Bible.
Yeah.
That is my that is the show. That's canon for me. So anything he's attached to, I'm a part of. When I saw The Ultimate Spider-Man, I watched that first episode, and it was like – it's the Ralph Wiggum thing. You could pinpoint where my heart breaks.
Like, I see it.
Like it's so
– I bit my Wookiee.
Right. And it's like there were parts – of Ultimate Spider-Man that I could get behind, but it was always done so much better and spectacular.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I enjoy the show because I get what it is. And they've had fun with the Spider-Verse and, like, they're trying to tie all the MCU shit. And it's kind of cool, like, Coulson's the principal and blah, blah, blah.
Hey, anytime you want to give Greg Sips, you know, the guy who's Iron Fist, if you want to give that guy work, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, he's the voice?
Ultimate Spider-Man literally made me stop watching Disney XD.
Yeah.
That combination of that and... Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
Yeah, they fucked up
that was so good.
Yeah, that was great.
So good.
First time they got it right.
I blame Man at Action.
Man of Action.
Man of Action.
Yeah.
There's three of them.
What was that? And they wanted to go the route. They wanted to keep the movies in line with the comics.
I think Marvel is pushing them, and Disney's trying to make them do this.
And
also,
they also wanted to get away from the serialized format and make the episodes more one-off, even though now they're kind of going back.
But the Avengers is like serialized now.
And they shot themselves in the foot, too, with X-Men Evolution. And
yeah, man, there were so many great shows that got canceled way too early.
Yeah, well, you can't all be Avatar.
No. Earth, what was this? What's he?
The Last Airbender.
Last Airbender. Earth's That's what I was Zero? Fucking trying Last to say.
Avengers. Yeah, Earth's
He's
Mightiest
the
Zero.
Last Earth's Mightiest Airbender.
Right.
Speaking of content, okay. Netflix has come out and said, expect new Marvel shit every 6 months. That's the wrong button.
Oh, shit.
That's the right button. Drink three times, motherfucker.
Talking nerd.
One for my fuck up, and I'm not even
every
drunk.
Every 6 months, I want it sooner.
Why can't 6 months, 30 seconds,
That's
but I want
much,
it now.
But Netflix clearly is showing their hand. It should be Netflix confirms nerd subscription for life.
Well, they got the jock over here. He was just originally going to be in
Netflix.
And out.
Until I got until
because
I got
why are you going to not subscribe now? Every 6 months you're going to have.
I
cool
was
shit.
Totally borrowing Netflix.
Yeah, I share mine with my sister
to watch Daredevil.
Yeah,
and then my wife told me, "No, we have it." I was like, "Good to know."
So, like, imagine, like, but that's going to be really crazy. Like Daredevil, then Jessica Jones, then another Daredevil, then Luke Cage, then another Jessica Jones, and then another one,
collected to Defenders,
and then all
right?
into Defenders, and then all into the movies. Oh my god,
geek boner!
Wow,
yeah. 6 months is too long.
Good, yeah. I mean, it takes only takes 3 days to fucking power through the show. Come on, people.
What did you think of Daredevil?
I absolutely fan of it, hands down, like, good. From the get-go.
You can stay on the show.
Again, best thing, one of the best things Marvel has done, Marvel Studios.
You know what it was to me? That was Marvel very calmly putting their hand on the cheek of DC going, oh, did you want to be serious?
Oh, yeah. Nice.
We can do that too, bitch.
Yeah.
I like how you said that.
Sort of walked away and they're like, that's a mic drop. They're like, go ahead.
Yeah.
Bleed.
Yeah. Here's a great segue. Our buddy, David Malofsky, who was on episode two episodes ago,
27.
A Place to Hang Your Cape, which we're now on that website also, he went to London Film and Comic Con just recently and got to interview the guy who played Nobu and the guy who played Francis.
Nice.
And I will put, listener, I will put a link to the show notes, Peter Shinkoda and Tom Walker. And he asked him about the fight scene, Nobu's fight scene. It's actually, it's a short, it's like 3.5 minutes, really good interview. I'll put a link in the show notes, jockandnerd.com/29. Check it out, you guys. A place to hang your cape. Where's superheroes going around?
One comment, I like that you said Daredevil was like basically a Marvel's telling DC, we can do this too. Mm-hmm. But the thing is with DC films is they're so angsty and so dreary. Like, it's not fun. Literally, Marvel made a serious show that was still, I can rewatch.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas DC stuff I watch and I'm like, I can't go through.
No, we got to be fair. There's only one in canon that they've Man done.
Steel, so, right.
Of course, they were able to, over the course of 2 hours, remove any chance of hope from their character who is the last bastion of hope.
Well, yeah, not another great segue. We actually
it's
have some.
As if I used to do a podcast.
We actually have some DC news. They're calling the DC Cinematic Universe, I guess they're calling the DC Extended Universe.
So it's going to be the DCEU?
The DC European Union. Yes. Well, I wonder if they take fucking euros or dollars over there.
He but also that's what. For error.
Yeah. And so Snyder is kind of turning into like the Kevin Feige. He's been. There was a big article.
Which really sucks, in my opinion.
Well, yeah. Well, we have issues with him. But there was a big article in Empire Magazine. A lot of stuff.
Got
leaked. Wait, before we get to that, remember we talked about they're doing DC Animated is doing Killing Joke?
Yes.
Which I was like, oh crap, that's awesome. Mark Hamill confirmed doing the Joker.
Cool.
And now they just need Kevin Conroy.
And he'll come.
Yeah.
For sure.
Why wouldn't they want him?
No, it's not a matter of want. Yeah, okay. It's a matter of you can't have one without the other.
I don't know if that's confirmed, but I know Mark Hamill is confirmed, and that's badass. And if you like Killing Joke, check out our buddy Peter Kendall. He works for these people called Cape Swoosh Productions. They do audio dramas of comic books. Really gloriously, lavishly produced, full sound effects, score, music, voice acted. They've done The Killing Joke. They've done Guardians of the Galaxy. They've done some Avengers. It's Cape Swoosh Productions on YouTube. I will put a link in the show notes.
Of course you will.
It's very cool. Check that out. So
let's get into the DC news.
Back to
finally,
Batman.
First off, finally that we're talking about DC.
Batman versus Superman. I might just jump to this. There's 18 bits from this Empire article that have come out. So, like we said, Zack Snyder and his wife Deborah and producer Charles Roven are overseeing the entire DCEU. Apparently, he's got like a big map. You know, because I was wondering, do they have a plan? There's a whiteboard and there's a giant map with
things. I hope they have a plan.
They need to have a fucking
because
plan.
I don't know if you're going to mention this, but their schedule in the next 2 years, they're going to be making movies upon movies upon
movies. It's crazy.
Like one after another.
It's crazy.
Or at the same time.
Yeah, they're going to have to. Yeah. Like they're doing kind of, they already are with Suicide Squad and Batman vs. Superman.
Right.
But so hopefully he has a plan. He has some kind of fucking outline sketched out. I hope it's not just like one post-it note. That would be sad.
Step one, remove Green Lantern from consciousness.
Always.
Oh, shit.
Wonder Woman begins filming this fall in London,
which
is cool. Justice League begins filming spring next year.
Right.
So like you said, they got to fucking move with these. Go.
They're going, yeah.
It's a mad scramble to the finish, people.
Are you going to put in here the Steve Trevor, who we got cast?
Oh, yeah, we can talk about that.
Well, you know, Chris Pine.
Yeah.
Cast as Steve
Trevor. I guess he chose that over playing Hal Jordan.
He chose it, yeah.
I was going to put that in there, but I was like, that's fucking non-news. Who cares?
Well, have they confirmed that Hal Jordan's going to be the Green Lantern?
They're doing Green Lantern Corps.
Right, but I heard, like, wouldn't they put John Stewart in there to sort of...
Yeah, they could put all of them in there.
They're doing a couple of them.
You could put Guy Gardner. You could put Hal Jordan.
Who's going to be in the Justice League?
I don't know.
Right.
I heard they're going to do... Or not, I thought I read a rumor that they're going to have both Green Lanterns in
the
Justice
League. Can they just not do Kyle Rayner and save me?
I agree. I wouldn't touch Kyle. Guy Gardner, he's a great character. They might do the two, Hal
I think
and
they
John.
Might do Hal.
The only way they could do Guy Gardner is if they got like Christopher Titus 10 years ago.
Oh my God, Titus is great. I used to love his show. He would be perfect.
Quick point though on Chris Pine. It's cool though that a major actor is taking the damsel
reverse,
in distress.
Yeah,
role.
The reverse. That's true.
Even though Steve Trevor's not really a damsel in distress.
And I think if he chose that, he has some ideas of what he could do.
It's
with
good that.
That
he's like, a major actor is taking a backseat to a female.
Yeah,
you know, in a major.
It does legitimize that the just like the female role,
right?
Man,
it's very progressive.
If DCEU beats Marvel to a female superhero movie that's really big, that's going to be a huge.
They probably will, though.
Yeah, I think they will because Wonder Woman has a lot more recognition than Captain Marvel.
Wonder Woman's going to come out.
She is the most recognizable female superhero of all time.
I got a bit about that too later. So I guess Ben Affleck had some. wigs.
I didn't know he was wearing wig. I couldn't tell he was wearing a wig.
He's wearing a Bruce Wayne wig that he picked out himself.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah. And so Batman's going to be about 45 or 46 in the movie. He's been Batman for about 20 years. He is not living at the mansion. He lives at a lake house. Batman has already met the Joker and Harley Quinn and the rest of the Suicide Squad. He's the one that put them in prison.
Makes sense.
So, like, there's all this history at the start that we don't know. But it makes sense.
Well, now we know they, I'm sure, have you guys already covered all the fan theories about Jared Leto Joker?
No, really. Well, I've seen it. We haven't really talked about it.
Okay, because I would say, like, I really actually hope they go in that direction.
What is the rumor?
The rumor is that Jared Leto's Joker is, in fact...
Jason Todd?
Jason Todd.
I don't know.
Oh, I heard that, and I don't know about that one.
Hey, man,
Well, then you can't do Red Hood, then.
But You could. Someone would make the point that Batman and the Joker have always relatively been around the same age. Jared Leto, clearly, his Joker looks way younger than Graying Temple's Batman.
Which is like the opposite of Batman 1989.
Right. Plus, the other thing, there were a lot of clues about saying, like...
Oh, that's a good point. If Batman is 46, why is the Joker, like...
So young. Yeah. Or looking like that. And the other thing, too, scrawled on the bat suit in one of the takes.
Haha, the joke's on you.
The joke's on
you. It's a Robin's costume.
It's actually a
Robin's costume. Yeah. Again, so clearly there's some backstory there about maybe the loss of a Robin.
Well, the other theory is that
the death in the family, which could tie to Jason Todd.
Now that he explained it, it wouldn't be too out of the question for it to be Jason Todd.
Joker kills Jason Todd in Death of the Family.
Yeah, but he didn't stay dead in the DCU.
There's also rumors that the dead Robin in this one is Tim Drake.
Mm.
Basically, if the Joker, Jared Leto's Joker, is not canon original Joker, it would make more sense, and it would make me forgive the face tats.
Yeah, they're going to have to.
If it's some young punk. Like Jason Todd would be a guy to get face tats.
This could almost be like he could have been someone who picked up the Joker's mantle after the Joker possibly it's too old and he's gone away.
Or someone simply said that who is to say that the Joker's not pulling strings elsewhere?
Yeah. Yeah.
All of these things.
Ah, shit.
All of these things sort of forgive the angsty. Like, basically, that is the only way they can smokescreen away from Marvel's money is by saying, like, we're going to come up with something. Like adult and cool, that all of the nerds in the audience are going to sit there shaking over.
Here's my question though. Gritty, realistic, great. Now, we've said before that DC has some of the worst fucking names of superheroes. What happens when you got this gritty, realistic movie and now you got to introduce someone named fucking Aquaman? How are you going to pull that shit off?
He's Arthur Curry.
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's
like it works with the Batman and Superman. It's still, it's realistic. Well,
the names are so iconic.
I don't recall anybody yelling out, hey, Hawkeye.
Yeah, that's a good point. But like, it's going to get to that.
Yeah,
like,
her name's Natasha. They never really refer to her as the Black Widow.
That's true. That's a good point.
I think it's just a matter of it's a code name. If anything, they'll have somebody on TV be like, it's Aquaman. Right, because, I mean, clearly he didn't name himself.
No. I think that shot in the trailer also, well, he says it in here, is that we will be introduced to Aquaman and we will believe that he exists in this world.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I mean, isn't that one of the lines in the teaser trailer where they essentially imply that by Superman coming out, or it was in the Suicide Squad trailer.
Yeah. Yep.
So he comes out and now everybody's sort of coming out of the woodwork, all the heroes and villains.
Which is a lot of, this is what Zach talked about in this article, which is kind of cool, is that Batman is a point of his life where he's been fighting villains and now this alien comes out.
Right.
And
the presence of this alien, like, it squashes everything he's ever had to deal with. He's like, oh my God.
He's like bank robbers.
My priorities have changed.
Yeah.
I'm dealing with a god.
You know, I kind of like that he's going to question his vigilantism, and like, that's kind of a cool internal conflict that Batman should have at that age.
It's a cool conflict. I just don't trust that they're going to be able to explore it.
It's just a matter of, I think that's how a lot of us left Man of Steel saying, that was really, like, downtrodden. The only way I'll buy it is if the next movie has to immediately deal with the fallout.
Also, but I don't like also that it seems reactionary on Zack Snyder's part, that I don't think he was planning for this movie to deal with the fallout, but after catching all that flack,
it's hard to tell.
He's right. It's hard to tell.
And it's funny too, because like Joss Whedon could easily have just told him, like, you know, we had the same amount of destruction as you, but I cut to shots of people getting saved every now and again.
Exactly.
Right. Instead of people running away in abject terror.
Well, plus it was also against Superman's core character to be killing people.
You know, I'll side with Matt on that again. I think from episode 18,
yeah.
I don't necessarily mind that he killed Zod, because I felt like with his angsty shirt-ripping battle cry when he was done, it was the, I'm too dumb to figure out a way to stop this guy.
Well, he hasn't developed his core character yet. Well,
here's the thing. Okay, granted, they made the killing part, so maybe his character evolves after this and he realizes he can't kill anymore.
Right.
But I think it has more impact if you do a few movies where he's showing this strong moral compass, and then he has to kill maybe in a third movie or a fourth movie, and it's much more of a sacrifice.
I just hope when they get to Justice League, they just establish very quickly that they're all just there to get in the way of the kryptonite. Like, everybody, let's be real about this.
Yeah.
Get the green, everyone!
If you see the green stuff, get it away from me. I'll handle the rest.
Batman carries a machine gun at one point in this movie.
That's weird.
Oh, when he's Desert Action?
Maybe the Desert Action Batman.
Desert Action Batman.
Now with more guns.
Oh, shit.
Right?
Clark Kent and Lois Lane are shacking up together. They filmed,
that was quick.
They filmed, like, yeah, really, right? They filmed scenes at Lex Luthor's house at a Detroit museum.
Good for Detroit.
Wonder Woman's role in Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice is key to shifting the story towards Justice League. The other thing you said in the article, Zach said that originally they came up with the Justice League concept first. Mm-hmm. And he's like, all these other movies have to now support that. Everything's going to be pointing to that.
So essentially, they're doing a reverse Avengers.
Exactly. They're doing it exactly reverse.
The team has to react to something, and now we can splinter.
Yep. They're going to do the team and then the solo movies, which, hey, we'll fucking try it. See if it works.
Sure. But have they haven't said any who, like, the big bad might be or where they might be rolling.
I mean, you see, there's
rumors of Brainiac.
Or Zod Dark. Becoming Doomsday, and maybe that carries on.
Darkseid.
Yeah.
No, Zod becoming Doomsday, I think, or not, they're using Zod's DNA to make Doomsday. I think that's going to be the main villain in this Batman vs. Superman.
Is interesting.
Doomsday. Is the fight, the villain that they have
or
to
would
fight.
He be more of a Bizarro?
Oh. Mm. Oh, they could do that too.
Yeah. Let's just not get rocky and
stupid. It's going to get crazy. So I guess it was Zack Snyder's idea to put Batman in his follow-up movie, which I didn't know, like...
Yeah, that I don't know. It's questionable too with that one.
Yeah.
Because I know Man of Steel made enough money to make a sequel, but maybe WB was like,
"Let's put Batman in there.
We got to throw Batman in this."
And then Snyder admits that Christopher Nolan was taken aback when he told him he wanted to reinterpret Batman alongside Superman, but he's fully supportive, I guess.
The check's cleared.
Yeah, basically the check's cleared. Also, Jenna Malone rumored might be Barbara Gordon. So there's a lot of fucking people in this movie, though.
There's a lot going on in this
movie.
What do they have to do? Basically, this is DC's – it's Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, : please, nerds, we're sorry, : what can we do to make you forget about Marvel?
Bullshit.
Man, they're trying – and you're right. Man, I don't know what I think about this. Like, he talks about how they have a sandbox, how the other directors get to stretch their legs in the sandbox, but there's limits, and then they kind of shift things around. They can push boundaries back. So I like that they're starting to think of this in an interconnected way.
I hope they started thinking of this
Suicide Squad looks awesome.
It looks something.
They like it?
You didn't like it?
I'm torn. I mean, I like the concept because our friendship with John Ostrander, and I do love the original book.
Yeah.
There were things to like.
Yeah.
There were things not to like about it.
Was it Will Smith?
Some of it, yeah.
But if he just keeps the mask on, though, the mask looks awesome.
The mask looks great. I don't think he's going to keep it on.
Probably not.
Way you're paying Will Smith a bunch of money to wear a mask.
And
do you know who I am? Let me fucking put this on the whole time. I'm
right.
Will fucking Smith.
And I think I have the feeling that they are going to downplay the Rick Flag character.
Yeah, I didn't see him a lot in the trailer.
No, they're downplaying him.
Because they lost the name.
Who was it supposed to be?
It was the guy who played Bane.
Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy was going to be Rick
Flag. He was Rick Flag, and then he bowed out last minute, so they kind of shifted the role. And again, I'm like, the Task Force X episode of the Justice League cartoon, one of the best interpretations of that at all.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I guess my biggest takeaway so far is that, first of all, someone better die quickly.
One of them. Yeah.
Well, let's be honest.
The Diablo.
Yeah.
Nobody knows who he is.
It's going to be Diablo.
He's wearing a Letterman's jacket from high school. Nobody knows who he is.
He's going to walk on screen and be like, oh, shit.
He's like, I'm the red shirt.
He's Diablo, or probably you'll fall in love with, what's his name? Killer Croc.
Killer Croc, they're going to keep. Die. Well, they could kill
him. They might keep him.
I think they nailed Waller.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I'm most excited.
Harley? I like Margot Robbie, so.
I don't really know her from anything. Cersei, she looks like stupid emo, kind of
crazy. Enchantress?
Enchantress, yeah.
Yeah, that's weird, too, that Enchantress is...
That's sort of a weird pull. She's way overpowered for the rest of the team.
That's like a whole different mystic fucking side of the thing.
Right.
Literally everyone else is like a human character.
Yeah.
I guess what it all comes down to is what actually are they doing? Once I understand what the mission is...
Yeah.
Maybe I'll be a little bit. I mean, so let's be serious. I will go see it.
Well, yeah,
it's not that they'll have to do a lot to ruin it for me to go. I paid money for Green Lantern.
Dude, I remember when Green Lantern came out. I was so excited to finally see a Green Lantern movie. I thought it was gonna be this awesome space opera.
I tried so hard to defend it, and you're like, but they put all that extra money to make the effects better.
Yeah,
I was like, yeah, and you can also pay an extra $20 to shake glitter on shitty art.
Yeah.
Where's
the writing?
And it's hey, you know what? Because of that, we get Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool, and I think everybody wins when that happens.
That's true. I did like the Ryan Reynolds casting, though, as Hal Jordan.
I thought it was okay. I think that, like, at the time, he seemed like he really loved that role.
Yeah.
Like, he went to
San Diego. He was into it, yeah.
He did, remember, like, everyone had that clip of him doing the oath.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And everyone, like, all the fanboys are like, yes. Suck it.
Even
Marvel.
In the movie, you could tell like he was into it, and he kind of like you could tell he wished it was better.
Well, they didn't write Hal Jordan the right way.
Yeah,
Hal Jordan is not Spider-Man. He's not this angsty guy that's like, oh, I'm not good enough
but
for this.
Fucking Deadpool.
Hal Jordan's like,
right?
I'm all in for that movie. Have you seen the leak trailer?
Oh, yeah.
That is
geek moment.
That is an R-rated superhero movie. I think we are all waiting for.
I'm so glad that he's continuously pushed for it.
Yeah.
Like even when
he pretty much championed this thing.
He's been doing it like when he was cast even in the shitty Wolverine Origins movie. Yeah. Like he came out of that and basically you could tell he's like, look, the first half, like before they fucked me over.
Yeah.
I was great.
Yeah.
Didn't you love that?
Yeah.
Don't you?
That's
want
what
more?
I kind of. You know, the guy is he's a geek. He loves the comic books and he's got the passion for
Let's
it.
Let's be honest. He was Deadpool in Blade 3.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty.
You know? I think he's the same. I wonder if it's the same Deadpool. Like, if they'll reference that shit.
They will reference
in the movie,
it,
right? Because he's talking to the camera.
They have to. What Deadpool would do.
He would have referenced it.
I'll just say one more point about why Ryan Reynolds didn't work there is they wrote the character. Hal Jordan would be like, yes, I'm a fucking hero. I'm the man. Right. And the whole time he was just like, I don't know. I'm going to be. I don't
Hal
know.
Jordan
I can, how
is
can
a
I overcome
cocky
fear?
Fighter pilot.
Right.
You know the type.
Hal Jordan goes. In the comics, goes to Sinestro and is like, I'm going to be better than you.
Even before he had powers.
Before he even knew that he was trained, he's like, I'm going to be better than you.
No, before he even got the ring, he's like, yeah, I'll fucking fly at Mach 5 speed. No one's ever done before. I got this. You know, he's just a cocky.
He's got a lot of false bravado because he wants to over. He's sad about his dad's death. He never thought he could. He wants to be like his dad.
Yeah.
But so he's got a lot of false bravado.
He remembers watching his dad take off and fly.
That was all added by Jeff Johns later.
Dude, but Jeff Johns, what he did with the lantern, like when I read it, I had no idea that he added it.
I'm the one that turned you on to
that. Yeah, and I was like, this should have been the thing from the beginning. This is fucking genius.
The whole War of the Light.
Yeah.
I think, let's say they had it. They lost it for a while. I think they got it back once they got some balance. But, the bigger shit problem with that movie to me was like they spent all that time having to worry about the rules of willpower and the whole thing behind parallax
you waste like the most powerful villain in the DC universe like that. You just fucking waste him
It's just bad when I mean a giant cloud is just a terrible villain.
Listener, if you want good Green Lantern, read Jeff Johns' 9-year Green Lantern run
or watch the animated series that was on for a season and a half.
I like that too. Yeah,
because
that was
really
that was really good. Yeah, I like
the
that
CGI
series.
One.
And
yeah.
I trust me, I hate. Yeah. I did not like that style going into it, and won me over.
Yes, it grows on you, and you. And you just fall in love with it, and you just kind of like, you're like, all right, yeah.
And every time they just kind of peppered in, they're like, hey, look, there's St. Walker.
Yeah, St. Walker was the bomb whenever he showed up. Blue Lantern.
I love the red lantern that eventually turned the hothead.
Right. Razor.
Razor,
yeah.
Atrocitus.
Yeah. Atrocitus.
Razor, they sort of wrote, I don't know if you guys were fans of Beast Wars.
I watched a couple of those.
Yeah, so clearly the people who did that watched that and they're like, Dinobot was great.
Yeah, they
let's,
just made
let's
him.
Let's port him over.
Yeah. They just made him.
Hashtag super nerd.
Yeah, that's where you're going to go to get good Green Lantern stuff right now.
Jeff Johns
in the cartoon.
Watch any of the Green Lantern episodes of JLA.
Oh, well, all of JLA.
Yeah.
Speaking of JLA, we got a lot of more tie-ins coming up with stuff we've already talked about in our podcast, Bromance Update. Talking Nerd! big new segment here at the Jock and Nerd Podcast. We've had some buddies over in Northumberland. These guys, Kevin and Chris, they have a podcast called 365 Flicks Podcast.
Great podcast. Their last one, they referenced us a lot.
They talk about us in a lot of the episodes. Basically, what's happened is somehow we found each other. Like, we both started podcasting at the same time. And they are, like, they are doppelcasters. Like, they like the same things, and they're very similar, and we've just been having this really long conversation, one podcast at a time, back and forth. As a matter of fact, one of them, Chris was the one who inspired one of our episodes 20, The Essential Spider-Man Reading List. So they kind of pay us back in this episode 15. They do, because they have a top five segment in their show. They do top five jock and nerd movies in our honor.
Oh, like five jock movies, five nerd movies, not mainstream.
Yeah, and no franchises. Before they even got to that, there was a bunch of queries and questions they had for us. Okay. And I thought, hey, let's answer them. What else
do? We should do it.
So Chris was talking about the new WWE wrestling game. Mm-hmm. And who's on the cover and a part of their – they were doing like their news roundup. And they don't really talk about video games, but he brought this up. That Stone Cold Steve Austin, not the most current wrestler, is on the cover of like the new video game. And he had a question for the jock.
Well, you know, that was fucking 10 years ago or whatever. You know, surely there must be other guys that you can put in the front there.
John Cena?
No, never that. Tell you what, actually, that was something I was going to ask Chuck and Nerd, because we usually ask Imran stuff. I was wondering what Anthony thinks of WWE. Because he watches UFC a lot, I know.
They've mentioned it at some point, I'm sure.
But, you know, you got Brock Lesnar in there.
Oh, Lesnar's a beast.
So, yeah, just wondering what Anthony thinks of WWE.
I got engaged with him.
So, Anthony, what do you think of WWE?
Used to watch it all the time when I was a kid, and up until maybe the 2000s I was watching it. Now I don't really watch it because I just don't watch it.
Do those two fan bases cross over, UFC fans, WWE fans?
So how UFC got popular is their Ultimate Fighter reality show. They got that show right after WWE Raw.
Oh, they placed it right after.
They had a great lead-in, so they got all the
Raw. So you
Raw
stuck
videos.
Around and watched that. Oh.
And then you had Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. Oh, because he crossed over.
Well, Brock Lesnar didn't come over until like 3 years after the reality show came on. But as far as my opinion on WWE, I respect the athletes a lot. I'll still occasionally throw it on just because I'm nostalgic and I want to see what
I mean, when Raw is here at Allstate Arena, you can't get a ticket, dude.
Right.
This sold out every time. It is a huge, huge event.
This is a big smart mark city, as they would say.
Smart mark. Those are the super fans, right?
Yes. Those are the people who troll the internet, who know all the backstage politics that
– of the wrestling.
Yes.
They'll go in and know.
I am one of them.
What's going to happen.
You are a smart mark?
I am.
Oh, shit. Okay. What is the life of a smart mark?
It means that I go on wrestling headline websites, and I like to know what's going on behind the scenes, why they put the championship on some guy versus another guy. Why this thing worked, why that thing didn't work. I pay attention to the ratings. I pay attention to the pay-per-view buy rates.
Who's the champ right now?
Seth Rollins.
What do you think of him?
I like Seth Rollins as an in-ring performer. I think he's good on the mic when they let him be. I think that the character, they sort of shot themselves in the foot. He's sort of a chicken shit heel where he's supposed to – he is believably beatable, which is, he stole the belt from Brock Lesnar, literally like – pinned his ass when he wasn't paying attention and ran away with the belt, which is awesome.
That's his character.
People want – that's the kind of villain you can get behind, because now everybody feels like, oh, anyone can beat him.
Yeah.
Because he's maybe 6'3" or 6'4", 220, but he's like more of a CrossFit athlete, like a beast of guy.
He's more overall lean and tone.
Right. And he looks beatable, but he's kind of held the belt now. I don't know if he's really had any memorable feuds yet, so he definitely would not be on the cover to answer your bros.
I really like how you understand what it is.
I want to continue this discussion on wrestling. So Brock Lesnar actually is when I stopped watching WWE.
Yeah.
Like I liked his character. I was like, God, that guy is a monster.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then I transitioned to UFC. Then he comes over to UFC. I'm like, yes, I love Brock Lesnar. Yeah. So then now that I know he's back in the WWE, I'll occasionally throw
it
on.
Oh, he went back.
He's back.
He was the champ for a whole year, nearly.
For a year.
I would say
he has a weird contract too, right? He only appears a couple times a year.
Right. Yeah. He has a deal like nobody else. Before, he was doing 4 dates a year, literally the whole year.
And that was his job.
That was it.
That's a pretty good job.
He is what Vince McMahon calls an attraction.
Yeah.
He is not a week-to-week guy.
Pulls the numbers.
Yeah, he pulls people in because every time he fights, it feels like a big fight feel.
Does he always win?
That's when he came back, they had him beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Undertaker, up to that point, 21 times, never lost.
Wow.
He had what was called the streak. And all of these old Smart Mark fans, when Undertaker lost to Brock Lesnar,
lost their shit.
Everybody lost their shit. Now, me personally, I don't like The Undertaker.
Yeah.
I was sitting there with the biggest shit-eating grin.
Why don't you like The Undertaker?
I'll be honest. Anybody who takes that long to walk to the ring has lost.
Wait, how long can he possibly take?
He takes a while.
It takes like a solid like 45 seconds for that man to saunter his
Get
ass
to
the
fucking
ring.
It's square.
It's partly because he's old, but partly because he's like he's walking in like slow
but even
motion.
When he
he's
was
a big
young,
dude, though.
Even when he was young. I get it. It's part of the character, the ominous, you know.
Yeah.
But like either way. But then they let Brock at SummerSlam – the following WrestleMania. So WrestleMania is April, SummerSlam's August.
Okay.
So when he came back, he challenged John Cena, and they put on a match like I have never seen in my lifetime. They let Brock Lesnar beat John Cena with an inch of his life and get no offense.
Whoa.
John Cena took 18 German suplexes in that match. And
Cena just took it all.
I think he had one or two couple punch flurries, and then Brock would knee him in the gut, and he'd be down. And he took that belt, and it literally became –
usually the matches are more back and forth.
Yeah,
right?
Especially at the main event. You're talking like 15 minutes minimum of people having what they call false finishes, you know, where they count 1-2, and the guy kicks out miraculously.
I would say that's physically more challenging for Cena –
yeah, now,
you know, to take a beating.
And I'm going to say, he took it like a champ. And but it, you know what it did is it made the belt feel like it was worth something. So when Seth Rollins eventually stole it in April, you felt legitimately like, wow.
Pissed off.
Yeah. And now that Brock, after that, he signed a new contract. I think he's doing.
He was debating between UFC and WWE. That's what I was following. He was leveraging the UFC to get a bigger deal from
WWE. Let's be honest. Yeah. I think, he was playing up that he had diverticulitis before. And now that he had cleared all that up, that he could get back in the octagon and just like, you know, show people how much better he was. But let's be honest, I think that his bread was buttered way much better.
How much does he make, you think?
I'm guessing it's got to be 20-30 million.
I'll tell you this. Brock Lesnar in the UFC, although he was the champ, he legitimately no one likes to get hit in the face, but he's one of those fighters. Literally, he would get hit in the face and he would like he has his reaction is not of that of a fighter to get hit in the face. He literally turns his back, and if you're like someone that likes to fight and like gets punched in the face, you literally learn that's the first thing you learn not to do.
Wow.
He literally he did not like getting hit. Not that anyone likes to get
hit.
Don't
drop your eyes.
But he was not a fan of being punched.
He's
in
a wrestler too, right. By trade, so he wasn't much of a striker.
Right. Oh, I see. Yeah. He couldn't get used to that.
He never got used to getting like trading punches and getting hit.
Cuz he comes from the wrestling background. Wow. That's interesting.
But I guess if I may take your question there and
answer
go
ahead.
On
your
behalf,
you to.
Right?
Yes.
The reason why Stone Cold is on the cover is because Stone Cold is to date the most important money-drawing figure of the WWE's history.
Okay.
And 2K16 is going to feature the largest roster of any video game ever.
Oh, wow.
They're saying about 120 playable characters.
Whoa.
So they're
– can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So I read like Deadspin and stuff. Is Hulk Hogan going to be in this game?
Oh, shit. No.
After he's got basically been erased.
He's
now.
Been deleted from existence.
Trust me, he'll be back. It's not that everything he did was wrong, absolutely. And I think.
Do you think he'll be back?
He will be before he's gone.
Because there's a ton of racists in wrestling.
There's nothing new. The video that they referenced, I heard 3 years ago. Yeah. Why do they do this now?
There's a Gawker lawsuit.
Yeah.
And this is their way of basically like shaming Hulk from trying to get them in court.
Wow.
No one's going to defend the man. And even he himself admitted his fault.
Yeah.
So it's just that again, you can't, you can erase Chris Benoit. You really can't. And yeah, trust me, he was one of my favorites.
You have to erase Chris Benoit.
You have to.
What did he do?
He killed his wife.
He killed his wife and kid.
Oh, I guess that's yeah, that's
and then killed himself.
Okay, that's enough cause for
I would say so.
Him.
But yeah, you can't erase Hulk Hogan from the annals of history. Like,
no,
there's been some funny memes. They're like, man, do you remember WrestleMania 3 when Andre the Giant tripped over himself?
Well, what do you do with the Rocky movie? Like, that didn't happen. Like,
he fought himself.
Yeah, he just fought. It's like Tyler Durden in Fight Club. Like, Hulk Hogan never existed.
That would put a layer of
that's
awesome.
Crazy. That's a great idea.
Like, wow, the Ultimate Warrior was just nuts.
He was really Hulk Hogan.
No, they're gonna. I think he'll come back.
Yeah, so I'll say 119 characters will be in WWE. But Stone Cold, I think it was just.
So that's a good pick for that game.
I mean, I will say, as a current fan, I wasn't happy by seeing it either. I was like, you know, and here's the funny thing. I think I have 2K14 or something, and at the time, they had this really big deal. There was a wrestler, Daniel Bryan, who all of us smart marks loved because he's an indie guy who fought and tooth and claw, and he is not your typical prototypical bodybuilder style.
Okay.
He's really just like a fighter, and he was the most popular, but then they put like Triple H or somebody else who was sort of like the standard.
Yeah.
So what they did is they released Daniel Bryan on the flip side, so if you pulled the sleeve out and put it the other way, you could have a Daniel Bryan cover.
Well, that's good to compromise.
So I imagine if there was any, if people really had to bitch about it, I mean, it's a video game cover. Yeah, who really cares?
Relax. Isn't there a curse with the NHL one? Or
or a Madden.
Madden curse.
Let me ask you one more thing on
please
wrestling.
Do.
Obviously, I know I'm familiar with John Cena, so I'm kind of familiar with the fact that he gets a lot of hate from the smart marks.
Yes.
The smarks.
And Chris didn't like Cena.
So
yeah.
What do you think of him?
I have a lot of respect for the guy because he's done it longer than anybody.
Right.
Longer than Hulk, longer than Stone Cold
he's
combined.
He's been the face, right?
He's been the face of the company for 12 years. That being said, I think that he's a victim of bad writing. I think they don't know what to do with him. And because he sells and moves so much merchandise, they just don't have a way to not make him super Cena. But that being said, like, the man can do amazing things in the ring, and he's a tough son of a bitch. I'll never buy his t-shirt.
He's doing some movies and shit too.
He just did Trainwreck. Everyone said that he's really funny.
I heard he was really funny in Trainwreck, which is surprising.
Look, you know, if I were a writer for the WWE, I would do everything in my power to find a way to transition him away.
Yeah,
but you can't. Because the guy moves t-shirts. What are you going to do?
I love how you appreciate this because it's like comic books.
It is. It's the same.
It's comic book writing.
It is. It's the same idea. Smart marks, all we really want is for the business to be great and for everybody to love it again. That's all.
And good story.
But don't you guys always – aren't you like smart marks basically hipsters? Because once someone gets popular, they start booing them.
Probably.
I remember getting – when I got in, Cena was just starting. Mm-hmm. So like he was doing that hip-hop thing.
Yeah.
So everyone was saying he was like the next Stone Cold. And everyone – he had a huge – like people were liking him a lot. And then didn't he get popular and then people started booing him?
What basically happened is when you quit, I quit too, same time. It's because they ran out of answers and he moved away from being the hip-hop – like he can freestyle rap and cut
–
legitimately, yeah.
He does. What? Like, if you look up –
white boy's got skills.
Oh, shit.
He ended up cutting like completely great raps on The Rock, like – off the cuff, just ripping him a new one. And Rock is
on The Rock. Yeah, he's good too.
Rock is the promo guy.
Yeah.
Like, one ever beat him.
Yeah, he's
on,
the show
the
guy. Oh, yeah.
But, no, I mean, I don't know.
I had no idea. First of all, this whole fucking smart mark thing
is
blowing my mind. I had no idea.
Long before I liked comics, I was a
wrestling
nerd.
Oh, this goes before comics.
Yeah, that's we never had cable growing up, so my dad every now and again would come home with like a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So I would just watch that, and that's how I would get wrestling. So you're like, oh, okay, I get it. Like basically that was superheroes to me.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite all time? Let me guess. Coco Beware.
Fuck
CM Punk.
CM Punk?
CM Punk.
I'm familiar with CM Punk because he's a
Chicago
guy.
Yes.
And he's transitioned to the UFC.
Right.
I think he wrote A comic.
Thor. He wrote
Thor. Oh, that's right. He wrote part of Thor.
And he's doing a DC book, and he's doing another. I mean, look, the guy.
I kind of want to. Hey, lucky. You think he listens to the show? CM Punk, stop by the Jock and Nerd studio. We live in Lincoln Square.
He trains in Milwaukee now, so he's not here around here that much anymore.
And say, like, as
well, he could do it on Skype if he wants.
I'm hopeful, like I said, like, he will make me watch UFC.
Yeah.
Because.
Is he joining UFC?
Yeah. He's in the UFC.
Oh, he signed a little deal.
Oh,
and
nice.
The UFC fans, the smart marks that are UFC fans.
What are those people called?
They're like hardcore. Okay. They're just hardcore fans. Okay. They all hate CM Punk.
Yep. Really?
They all hate. They hated Brock Lesnar. They even hate CM Punk even more because at least Brock Lesnar came to the UFC. He fought an MMA fight.
Yeah.
And he had a legit wrestling background.
Punk has no MMA.
Punk has nothing. He's done some training on the side.
He's going to get his ass kicked, dude.
It depends who they fight. Match
him up with. I've heard, as the CM Punk side of it, and my cousin's a big MMA fan, and like he schooled me entirely on this. He's like, well, look, it's all about who they pair him up with.
Right.
If they give him a tomato can, I think is the term,
yeah,
some shit hobo, they pay $5 to take a fall. But legitimately, I guess it's just like, then people are like, yeah, right.
Right.
And then if you put too good a guy in there and they just waste Punk, then it's, you know, have you shot yourself in the foot with your investment?
Yeah.
Punk, literally, there's an interview with Punk on an MMA site where he's like, my first fight, I know I can't win. If I beat this guy, they're going to be like, that guy sucked.
Yeah.
He was chosen to beat
you.
And
if he loses.
And if I lose, they're going to be like, you sucked anyways. You shouldn't have been here.
He just has to get past that. Right. He's got to get a couple.
Damn if you don't. But yeah, I was going to say, I have a lot of respect for a guy like that who, you know, I mean, he had the world on a stick and he made that choice to quit. I mean, can you imagine if DC Comics basically said, like, look, how about this? Marvel called you up and they said, buddy, I know you love Spider-Man. Okay, and I'm going to let you write a backup Spider-Man like every couple of years, but I'm going to put you on Moon Knight or something.
Okay.
Now, of course, in your mind, I'm working for Marvel.
Fuck yeah, I'm in.
But let's say the fans really clamor because you put Spider-Man in the background, and they're like, that guy really knows his shit. He could put Spider-Man back there. I would love to see that happen. And Marvel's just like, you know, no, Dan Slott's better. And essentially, you just make that push. You're like, look, it's Spider-Man or nothing for me now.
Wow.
And they're like, well, then I guess it's nothing
it's
for
nothing.
You.
Nothing. Ah, fuck.
And that's essentially
like
what he did.
Forced his hand.
I mean,
well, what did he want?
He wanted to main event.
He wanted to draw Spider-Man. Oh, no, sorry.
He wanted to be the last match at WrestleMania 30.
Okay. Was that the last one? This past one?
2 years ago.
2 years ago? Okay.
So what the basic tenet was that they were going to put him in a match against Triple H, who is Vince McMahon's son-in-law, who is a longtime wrestler,
right,
who is known amongst the smart marks as sort of being – basically, he fucked his way to the top. Let's go ahead.
One quick Triple H thing. This is
all right, wrap up the goddamn sports segment, Josh.
This is not sports. Sports entertainment.
This is comic sports.
It's actually
–
it is the – yeah, it is the
I remember that storyline pissed me off where he was facing Booker T, and Booker T is an African-American wrestler. And the whole time he's being real racist to fucking Booker T.
Oh, like, shit.
You do not. Your people have your role, and I have my role. You'll never get to my role. And he like tipped him a dollar and stuff. And in that feud, you expect Booker T to win to overcome the white guy. He loses.
Oh shit!
He fucking loses. He doesn't even win the title.
Nope.
Hold on. The listener hasn't had a chance to drink lately.
Jugger nerd.
Okay, that's two.
But yeah, go ahead.
No, so like they said, CM Punk, you will fight Triple H, and the whole
or
idea,
nothing,
because well, CM Punk is supposed to be this counterculture, the smart marks hero, and you facing Triple H is like, you know, that's a geek boner for them.
Yeah.
To which he's like, I've already fought him. I don't need to fight him. I want the championship, and I want basically what he was saying is, look, give me the ball. Put me at the top of your program.
Let me take it and run.
Because in 2011, his contract was ending, and he let it leak that he was going to literally beat up Cena and take the belt and start shopping it to all the independent promotions.
Oh.
Now, it got word out, and this is the infamous pipe bomb promo. They gave CM Punk a live mic, and Vince told him, you can say whatever you want, and I'll cut you off when I feel like you've had enough. And Punk did it. He said things that you were never supposed to say. He broke the fourth wall.
Wow.
He called
McMahon, let this happen. Vince, let this happen.
Vince is a fucking genius. Of course he
is. Yeah, he is.
And they cut the mic off at the perfect time. What happened, though, is that was supposed to escalate, and Cena was a champion. Punk was the counterculture. You'd think that Punk would beat him. John Cena beat him. And they let Punk become the big villain.
Yeah.
They gave him the ball a little. But ultimately,
and then threw him under the bus.
At the end of it all, they're like, this is your prize. You get to be a co-main event on WrestleMania. And he said no. And basically, he kept coming to the shows and doing what they said. And, you know, if there's an infamous podcast with him with his buddy Colt Cabana, who has a podcast called Art of Wrestling.
Okay.
And he basically laid it out there and said, look, I was sick. I was hurt. I was mentally frustrated and frazzled.
Wow.
I was living my dream but not being able to do what I wanted. And he's like, you know, I save my money. I'm a smart guy. And I'd much rather be happy and a little broke than to have sold out and just be
on the card. He didn't sell out,
So he literally quit the company. Like, his ass got pitched over the top rope at Royal Rumble, and he walked out and never came back.
Kept walking.
Wow.
Oh, shit. I kind of respect that.
And that's sort of why – and not only that. I mean, he was really good in the ring. He could tell great stories. And, and again, he is a straight-edge guy, so there's no steroids or anything like that.
Wow.
So, like, he's a guy that – he is the reason I got back in, because when Cena became Super Cena and they went PG –
Super Cena,
and it's like, you know what, this it's going kitty for me. This
does
is
he
not...
fly now?
No, but he's superhuman.
He's superhuman. Like, but yeah, it's kind of like Marvel in the 90s,
it's very
where
comics, right?
They were writing just for the 12-year-olds, and there was a fucking million clones. And
I'm sure there's a segment of our audience that watches pro.
It is very comics though. Like, this is exactly comics. Yeah.
It is, and I say, like, you know, they've got decent storylines, and now we'll see where we're at.
Well, Chris, they got your answer.
That's what happens when they ask us a question. Right? We give them a long fucking answer.
Like, they asked us a question, and like the Spider-Man show, he literally said, give us 15, 20 seconds. I was like, fuck you. I'll give you a whole episode on Spider-Man. So this is the return of the top five. Now, wait, there's another question.
Okay.
Uh-oh. They continue talking about the Batman versus Superman trailer, and they get to the Wonder Woman part, and this comes up.
So, yeah, she looks fantastic.
Is that a thing? Is that a thing in the comics? Batman and Wonder Woman?
I've no idea. Honestly, I've no idea on that one. I've never... Wonder Woman to
Imran,
me...
Imran, let us know.
Jugging nerd! They're calling me out.
Before you get into the comic parts, I know about their romance through the Justice League show.
Let's start there, because there's two parts to it. Okay. And the Justice League and Justice League United is a big part of it.
Yeah.
So... let's say yes, they were a thing briefly, kind of overtly, shortly, and weird things. But let's start. What was their relationship in the show?
They had like
they were dating.
They were dating, but it was like not a lot of people knew about it. And like Flash would always joke, he'd be like, what the hell? Why is it with him?
I mean, Diana's had many loves, obviously. Right. Bruce has had many loves.
I like that pairing, though.
This is a weird pairing. And we'll get into that later. Let's explain what happens in the comics.
Right.
I'm going to start with the main one. That's main continuity, Justice League America by Joe Kelly. Joe Kelly's run in 2003 and 2004. It was Justice League number 74, 75. This is post-crisis. There was a storyline called the Obsidian Age. Basically, they had to travel back in time because Aquaman was lost in time. This is what
very
I...
Very comic.
Very comic. That's what I learned from my research. So they're back in time, and so this page here, at the moment of they're about to fight to their death, right before they fight, Batman kisses Wonder Woman. They share a kiss.
Time to screw.
Yeah. There's like, let's go. And then, like, he kisses her and they jump in. They're like, let's fucking go.
And that's the first time anyone's ever seen that? Or
yes. That's the first time it happened. Now, Joe Kelly also, he can also be credited for giving us the fun Deadpool. Mm. Rob Liefeld created Deadpool, but...
he was like a villain, right?
Rob Liefeld's Deadpool was so fucking serious.
He was
like,
DC's Deathstroke.
Yes. He was like literally a rip...
Well, his name's Wade Wilson, Slade Wilson.
You know, if Rob Liefeld ever listens to the show, God bless him, he's great. I'd love to hear him, but fuck, we backed on him a little bit. He basically ripped off like five different superheroes and made Deadpool. But Deadpool did not become the Deadpool we know until Joe Kelly started writing Deadpool. Then he broke the fourth wall. Then he made him a jokester and really made him this current Deadpool. Right? So that happens in 74, 75. 15 issues go by. They don't talk about it. Issue 90, there Wonder Woman finds – I don't know if she finds Martian Manhunter or she just – there's this device that she borrows from him. It's called a Transconsciousness Articulator. Basically, what this does, it plays out possible futures.
It's an app on the iPhone.
I think you could get that. I think you could get that. So she played out all these possible futures with her and Bruce.
Yeah.
None of it ended up good. So she goes and talks to them. They basically decide they're just going to be friends.
Oh, she friend zoned him.
She friend zoned him.
She friend zoned Bruce.
And in between, but although also read in between that, Bruce was kind of a dick. Like she tried to like talk to him about the kiss, and he like fucking stood her up.
Bruce was always a dick.
Yeah, he stood her up because he's a playboy. He's got all the fucking outside out over
here. It's not even that. Well, he plays up that. But he is actually a dick. Yeah.
So, like, at one point, he, like, stands her up. Like, they were supposed to talk about the kiss. So she finally does this thing, and she's like, we should probably be friends.
Because wouldn't you be scared shitless trying to tap that?
Yeah.
One wrong move and
exactly. So a couple of other instances of this are, like, Elseworld alt story tales. Okay. So this one panel is John Byrne's Elseworld trade. It was a three-issue series called Generations. It was Elseworld. And in the future, you could see, like, Superman has gray hair. In the future, they hook up. There's a lot of photos. There's a lot of drawings of Batman kissing Wonder Woman if you actually Google it. I was like, where's this from? What is this from? So that's another case, but it's like an Elseworld future tale. Doesn't
Kingdom
really
count. Kingdom Come did it, too.
Kingdom Come did it, too. Another great one is Blackest Night, Wonder Woman Blackest Night by Greg Rucka. Mm-hmm. That's where this one's from. They share a kiss.
Why do they share a kiss then?
I don't know. It was a weird Blackest Night thing when the death rings were up. I didn't read the
dying.
Didn't read the Wonder Woman Blackest Night, and there's boobs. So, and then Matt Wagner, awesome Matt Wagner, who's worked on Grendel, amazing writer artist, wrote this 3-issue series, miniseries, 2003 called Trinity.
I own it.
Oh, you have. So do you remember this? But this is the best one because he basically sneaks a kiss and then she fucking decks him right afterwards.
His head should be clean.
Which somehow doesn't immediately end
and
his life.
Somehow does not cave his head in and just it goes, fuck. Yeah. He just falls over. Yeah. Now, why is this pairing good? What I got is that they were both kind of loners.
Yeah.
And this is what attracted them to each other. And of course, now we know the New 52, they did the big Superman Wonder Woman kiss. That is a really boring pair up.
It's the obvious choice.
Yeah, it's
obvious
so obvious.
Plus, I mean, everybody.
And why would Clark want to be with Lois when he could be with Diana Prince?
This was Hulk Black Widow before Hulk Black Widow was a thing with Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Batman himself. I mean, in the pantheon of JLA, Batman may be the stand in for the reader. Because he doesn't actually have any powers.
Oh, yeah.
So who do you want to get to tap ass
fucking
to,
Diana
right?
Prince. So in the movie, I guess Bruce and Diana, maybe they knew each other. They have a relationship.
They have a relationship.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Well, I like this pairing. Well, how is Trinity? Is it good?
Yes.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I'll put it. Link in the show notes, people.
I agree.
I like
this pairing, too, just because it's so out of left field.
Yeah.
But then when you think about it, like – Diana, she would really respect that Bruce, this normal guy, who's not really a god compared to all these other gods, is holding his own.
Yeah.
I think she would really respect that.
I think they both respect each other's abilities.
And he respects her, her fighting ability.
It kind of makes sense.
Plus, I mean, she's royalty. He's stupid fucking wealthy.
He's stupid rich. Yeah.
Makes
they kind of, that's
they
why,
come from a similar background.
Yeah.
In that sense.
Yeah. And they would probably have the same social, like the similar social circles of hot rich people.
He looks good in a tux. He can go attend charity dinners.
She can fucking do
They're
the waltz.
Both also kind of socially awkward because she grew up in a culture of women.
Yeah.
And he's always been closed off.
Yeah.
And not, I mean, not emotionally available.
Yeah. And just has the fake being
so they're
social.
Both kind of awkward.
I love it. I wish they would go back and,
he's got awesome, gadgets and, vehicles. She's got an invisible fucking plane.
That's true. It's like, hey, you want to do it in your plane, Diana?
Oh shit!
Everybody can see us. I know.
Talking nerd.
I think he gets off on that. He gets a little
geek boner
off of that. Speaking of Wonder Woman, I heard a reference on a podcast recently of a superhero reference that was really interesting. You may or may not know this tidbit, but a reference on a podcast you wouldn't expect.
No.
This podcast is called Undisclosed, the State versus Adnan Syed, which is the continuation of Serial podcast. Now, I love the case in Serial, and I've listened to this show because to this day, the case is amazing. And if you listen to the show, the whole thing was fucked up.
It's crazy, though. I mean, I agree that the show is great. Just the fact that you're saying the case is amazing and it's a murder case.
I know.
It's like, oh, what are you talking about?
I feel
this
like I just watched an awesome Dateline.
That's for murders.
That's the icky feeling you get, though, from listening. You're like, I love this, but then this was a real
murder.
It
really blurs the line.
It's a real murder. Like, you're taking enjoyment of the fact of someone's death.
Well, and before I get to this, I mentioned to you that we were talking about how Sarah Koenig kind of fucked up these people's lives, maybe unknowingly, to the point where on Undisclosed, someone tweeted them. They were like, is Anand going to be on the show? How come we haven't heard him? She goes on to explain that, you know, in the opening intro where you hear you have a call from Joliet. So the rest of that message actually says you cannot legally record this conversation.
Oh, great.
So the lady, Rabia Chowdhury, she goes, I've heard this so many times. Every time I called him, it never occurred to me. Someone from the state of Maryland heard Serial, Adnan Syed's phone privileges revoked.
Oh, shit.
Fucked him up.
Koenig fucked up his life more.
Well, I mean, I think she was pretty clear and evident that even at the end of this, it's not like she was going to, like, free and clear his name. No. She was simply trying to...
It was kind of like Lost, the TV show, if you think about it.
Yeah.
We wanted an answer, and we were never going to get a fucking answer.
No, you just couldn't. I mean, but she made the case that the case was fucked up.
And just like Lost, the smoke monster was a piece of shit.
Right.
Oh, shit.
Anyways, back to this. So the latest episode, they were talking about this case Fry, which had the first use of the lie detector.
Okay.
But they actually couldn't use it because it wasn't familiar with the forensic community. There's a superhero reference, which I was surprised. They were discussing types of admissible evidence. They mentioned about the first case of the lie detector. American psychologist and inventor William Moulton Marston in the 1920s created the first systolic blood pressure test. In fact, his wife suggested it. She noticed that when she got angry or excited, her blood pressure and heartbeat started to rise. So he creates this test to measure that, and it becomes a component of the modern lie detector / polygraph. Now, if you are a hardcore DC nerd, that name just made you do this. Why? Because Marston had a really weird career. So he invented that test. In fact, that they mentioned you can do a Fry test or a Fry hearing now, which is it throws out inadmissible evidence. The irony is that first case, they couldn't use. The guy went to jail. Even though he passed the thing, they couldn't use it because it was not accepted. So Marston has this weird – while he's inventing and psychologizing, he also starts writing comic books. And he appeared in salesman ads for Gillette razors. So like really weird guy. But – in the 40s, he starts to see the comic book medium. He sees the potential kind of as an educational form, kind of like our friend Mark Fishman is here kind of, you know, doing an all-ages book. But he also sees they're all dudes.
Yeah.
And again, another idea given by his wife, William Morrison Marston creates Wonder Woman. 1941, who she had the lasso of truth, tying it all back to the lie detector and his psychology background. Wonder Woman's first appearance,
what
All-Star
about his
Comics.
Fetish? Talk about his fetish.
Number 8, 1941.
What is his fetish?
Okay, this is a continued notes. What is his fetish?
BDSM.
Was it?
Oh,
no.
My gosh. What is Wonder...
Talking nerd!
In the original comic book, yeah. What was Wonder Woman's weakness? If she got shackled, she lost all her powers.
Is that what it was?
Yes.
Dude, he was a little bit... They were all kind of pervs back then, but he was a little bit twisted. Like, clearly this guy is weirdo.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
If you bound her hands, she was powerless.
Did they do that in the TV show, Linda Carter? I don't remember.
I don't recall, but that's one of the tenets of the... Because it used to be a big joke. Like, the difference between Marvel and DC growing up is that Marvel's heroes had real faults, like grenades and blood disease.
Yeah.
DC's characters had random
like
shit
kryptonite
like kryptonite, the color yellow, and wood.
And wood, yeah, for Green Lantern and Superman. Oh, my God. Now, wow. You know what? That's crazy.
You just
crazy.
Blew my mind with that one.
Oh,
that was really a thought. She had to be shackled to restrain
and
her
again,
powers? Holy
who was
fuck.
One of her biggest villains? Dr. Psycho, a little crazy midget stalker man.
That's probably what Marston looked like.
Yeah.
Talking nerd! I love you, William Moulton Marston.
Wow.
I salute you. Now, I mentioned that episode they did was the top 5 Jock and Nerd movies. I have the list here for you guys. Don't say it because, I want you to go. I'll put a link in the show notes. Go listen to the show. It's a lot of fun. They're episode 14 and 15. Great episodes. They forced one guy to watch The Room. Tommy Wiseau's The Room and review it. And anybody, anytime, talks about The Room, it's fucking awesome. Because there's no logical conversation you can have about that movie. It's always hilarious. So, these movies here, I got to thank them. Chris and Kevin, this was very thoughtful. I was so flattered. Like, I think I shed a tear. I was like, oh, they did a top 5 for us.
That was actually very, very
wasn't
thoughtful.
Wasn't that nice?
It was very nice.
My movies, I've seen 3 of the 5, which are highlighted.
I'll tell you, I've seen 2 of the 5.
And I like that for you, he went like a different sport movie. Right. And for me, he's like, I'm taking out the obvious franchises. Brilliant. So good. It makes it harder. Like, they put a lot of thought into this.
You have to listen to that show, listener.
I wanted to ask you, what would you add to this?
For nerd movies?
No, for jock movies. For you.
What jock movie would I add to
that? Yeah, like for you personally. Even.
Right. Ah, oh, man, you got to have Rocky in there.
Yeah, they talk about that he was going to, but that was like such a, it was like almost an easy one.
Too easy? Okay.
No, but he mentioned that, and yeah, I would say Rocky.
Too easy. You know what, one movie, I don't know if people agree with me. They mentioned it, though. Every time it's on, I watch it. Varsity Blues.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, with Vanderbeek.
Vanderbeek.
And the whole clapping.
And the girl coming out in the whipped cream bikini. Yeah,
that's all people remember.
That's all people remember. Yeah, that was
and apparently a very popular NBC show.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's not still on.
Heroes? No,
Varsity Blues.
There's a Varsity Blues.
Yeah,
show.
Oh, was
there?
Show. Yeah, there
and
was.
People are like going ape shit over. They're like, yeah, this is so life. And
it ain't no Friday Night Lights.
Oh shit.
So I wanted to add a couple of movies, which for me they're awesome nerd fulfillment movies. And I think if you guys see these movies, you'll agree. One is from 1984, The Last Starfighter.
My wife will give you a high five on that one.
I fucking love – basically, have you seen this?
No.
So basically, it's about this –
there's no movie you can mention that I've ever
seen. Fuck off. He wasn't even born when this movie.
Oh, shit.
This movie, basically, this small town kid, kind of an outcast, doesn't have a lot of friends. The popular kids go off to the beach and leave him alone. There's one video game in by their – wherever, by the gas station. He's it's called The Last Starfighter. It's a space shooting video game. He loves this game. He's really good at this game. Plays it all night. He's playing it one night when a fucking spaceship lands down there.
He gets sucked into the game.
No. Oh. This alpha an alien that looks like he went from Alpha Centauri comes down and goes, hey, buddy, we put this ship because we were looking for fighters. We're in the middle of a war. We needed to find out someone who could fight really good. You are amazing. Will you join us and fight our alien war? And as a fucking video game nerd, you're like, oh, my.
Oh, shit.
I mean, who wouldn't want that?
Man, you're about to blow your
awesome.
Top.
It's so
fuck.
Awesome. I love the movie.
I'm still back on the Jewish thing. We're like, how much money?
How much is that before? Can I get half up front?
Right. Is this if I win this war for you, is there some kind of like tax free, duty free? what am I taking out of this?
I don't think he checked the contract on this one. He's like, I'm all in. So great nerd.
Did
for
he
filming.
Have parents?
Yeah, I don't know. They don't. They weren't around. It was summer.
Mom, Dad, going to war. Okay.
Going to war in an alien spaceship.
I love movies from the 80s.
Right? They're so silly. Another silly 80s movie, another nerd fulfillment, is Explorers, 1985. This one features a young River Phoenix and also Ethan Hawke. Young Ethan Hawke. Wow.
My wife should be here. This is so her.
This is another great nerd fulfillment. Why? These kids are a bunch of nerds, and one kid starts having these dreams of these blueprints. And he's like, I'm having these dreams of this spaceship. He draws them out. They build this thing. It's a spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, what is this? And then he has another dream of another piece. And they put it in and the spaceship turns on. And they shoot off into space in like a homemade spaceship. Turns out that there's an alien race. It's a kid. It's like a teenager alien who's kind of bored. And was bored living up in space. He was sending these things down to the kids so he could get them up just to hang out with them because he was bored. And like he gets scolded by the end, and because he was.
I think I've seen bits of this movie.
What's that?
It's kind of pervy.
It's like he pretty much
friends.
Yeah,
he's a teenager looking for little boys.
He pretty much lures them with chocolate into his white space van.
Come into my white windowless van.
Oh, shit.
But again,
don't worry, come up here. We're just going to watch some movies.
Okay. Dude, if you are like a 13-year-old and you watch the movie, you're like, oh my God, that's the coolest thing. I can't believe it actually happened to them.
I'm going to find the first person with a conversion van with a wizard on it.
I would add those two to the nerd movies.
Perfect.
Here's what made me think about those movies. Perhaps I came across, and I'm going to share, I'm going to play a little bit at the beginning, the most epic movie review I have ever heard.
Yeah, I listened to that.
Movie Bob, this guy, Movie Bob's review on Pixels.
I think you made me listen
to this. It's 10 minutes long, and it's the most gloriously swear word filled 10 minutes you'll ever hear.
And he's actually really good, too. I listened to a couple of his, like, he did the Does It Still Hold Up or something like that.
Yeah. No, he's a legit reviewer. Yeah. He's got good observations. Let me just play the first 50 seconds, and you will get the point. Because the first 50 seconds are amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty. Pretty damn good.
I have no words. I just don't, guys. I saw Pixels mere hours ago as of this writing, and I find myself incapable of putting what I'm feeling into words. Such is the magnitude of the disaster I've witnessed. Is this what cavemen felt like the first time they saw what to them must have looked like something literally eating the fucking sun? Is this that existential horror thing Lovecraft was talking about in between all the super uncomfortable anti-Semitic stuff? Pixels is an unmitigated piece of god-awful fucking dog shit. Its existence feels alternately like a poison or a genital infection. It is cinematic strychnine. celluloid chlamydia. I shouldn't even be here right now. This isn't my jurisdiction. I'm a film critic. Pixels isn't a movie. It's a motherfucking active crime scene. And the crime is cultural vandalism.
Oh, shit.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
That makes me cry, dude. Oh, you guys have to listen. That's just the first 50 seconds. It goes on for another 9 goddamn minutes.
For a person without any words, he found a lot.
My God.
How badly is Adam Sandler's
movie? What is Adam Sandler doing?
Cashing checks.
That's true. He's just cashing checks at this point.
I think he could give about zero fucks.
So in the review, he mentions that these two movies that I love are better examples of, you know, that what that movie should have been.
Right.
You know, yeah. Being true to that.
Honoring the video game culture, yeah. The old school, yeah. Video game
Well,
culture.
How about, I mean, if you're going to be more with the times, how about Wreck-It Ralph?
Yeah, yeah. That's way more in that vein. He pretty much just shit over everyone's childhood. In one fell swoop, and it's still going to make shitloads of money, I bet.
No, I don't think
so. No, it actually didn't do too well.
Good.
It hasn't done well.
Good. Go see Ant-Man again.
Or could we also say that they already did that exact concept in Futurama?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That literal exact same thing, and it was great.
No, and like fucking Peter Dinklage? What is he doing in the Peter Dinklage? And I love Cashing Josh Gad. He's great. What? How much? They must have paid him a lot of fucking money.
You know what? I don't fault a single person who works with or around Adam Sandler because it's, do you want to come fuck around for a couple million dollars?
Yeah. Who cares? We make
and
a
watch
piece
me
of
play
shit.
The same exact character.
It,
yeah, I always
matter.
Kevin James must suck off Adam Sandler.
Oh my god!
Did you hear about what Adam Sandler's worked out a deal with Netflix to release some original
when is that
movies?
Horseshit starting. Maybe would that be good?
No, it won't
well,
be good.
I mean, given that he already had people walk off his set for being offensive.
Oh jeez.
Wow.
Yeah, he's going to be on releasing some stuff on Netflix exclusively.
Can't we just delete everything except for Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore.
Hey, Waterboy's good.
Yeah.
I like Waterboy.
Paul Thomas Anderson did a fantastic movie with him.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. Love Hurts? No.
No.
Punch Drunk Love.
Punch Drunk Love.
Dude, that was a crazy Adam Sandler role. And he's actually really good in that.
Well, the funny thing is, that if you ever read up on it, is that Paul Thomas Anderson himself actually said, I find myself watching your movies so often as just brain filler.
Yeah.
He's like, I just had to. It's basically like Picasso going, hey, Thomas Kincaid, your shitty like swallows in the dove thing is so cute. I feel like I need to do that too. And then just paints a fucking masterpiece.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly – you're right. That's exactly what he did in that movie.
Ebert said that.
If you never see – like,
nice.
If you check out that movie for the most unsandlery role ever.
It's a distillation of what actually you like about Adam Sandler. It's like, oh, this guy has anger for real reasons. And it's got Philip Seymour Hoffman.
I mean, I would liken that to like Jim Carrey in Eternal Sunshine of the Sleepless Mind.
Or Truman Show.
And – Will Ferrell in that movie.
Strange But Fiction.
Strange. That's such a great movie where he is in a novel and he's hearing the novelist narrate. She's writing his life and it's happening. And he's like, what the fuck is going on? It's so good. And he's great in that.
I think I heard Will Ferrell did a Lifetime movie. He recently did a Lifetime movie. I think I heard this on another podcast.
I thought that was a joke.
I don't know if it is a joke or not.
Or him and Kristen Wiig were supposed to do something like that.
And he literally wanted it like – it's like one of his things.
He did that Spanish movie all in Spanish too. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
That's fantastic. He does like a fake Western Spanish movie in Spanish
with
subtitles.
I wish one day for the Samronauts to make me so much money that I can just fuck around.
He's clearly just trolling at this point.
Yeah, I mean, when you got the money for it, right?
Yeah, right.
All right, throw this podcast bromance back at the fellas, because we can kind of answer their questions, but I want to keep this going. And seeing as how we had the Godzilla show last, and how Godzilla and, like, Japan and U.S. very connected in Godzilla, what do the Brits think of Godzilla?
Right.
Specifically, Kevin and Chris, what do you guys think? And then, like, what do your friends think out there?
Brits, or even if you have you can get a general consensus of like what Europe would think of Godzilla.
I'm kind
of
curious. Like, do they?
What do you think of Godzilla?
You know, it's never been my bag, but I got respect for the big green lizard.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it has rabid fans, and I'm just
one.
Joel, you and Rugboy and John Belotti Jr., and there's lots more.
Yeah.
But it made me wonder, like, I wonder what the UK thinks of Godzilla.
Did you hear of they're making Rampage, the 80s video game, into a movie?
Oh, really?
Yep.
That's awesome. Yes, I did hear that. That's
starring
The
Rock.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I hope he's the big green dragon. Or the monkey.
No, he's just random human.
He's a person.
Human.
Oh, he's random human.
Well, there's a giant wolf, a giant dinosaur.
How do you make a fucking movie out of that, first of all?
I don't know how you don't.
Yeah, how do you not?
Right? How do you make a movie out of it? Yeah, it's like, yeah.
Just they made a movie, Battleship.
That's true. That was a horrible movie.
It was really bad.
Wow.
But Chutes and Ladders was fucking great.
I love the Sorry. That was my favorite.
Doc and Nerd.
All right, let's fucking wrap this shit up.
Doc and Nerd.
Listener, if you're still with us, thank you very much. Mark, thank you so much.
You want to do one last plug? In.
Yes.
Tell everyone what they need to know. I think you know what that is.
Absolutely. First of all, thank you guys very much for having me.
Man, thanks
awesome.
For contacting.
You can go – if you search, go to Kickstarter. You could type Unshaven Comics, or just do me a favor. Go to Facebook.com/Unshaven Comics. I'll be posting about this every day.
Yep.
Or just go to the Jock and Nerd show page, and you'll see we'll have a link to the Kickstarter. Once again, we're pitching the Samuronauts Curse of the Dreadnoughts. That's samurai astronauts led by an immortal kung fu monkey fighting zombie cyborg space pirates.
Geek moment.
Nice.
And if you should happen to back us up – and mention that you heard about it on Jock and Nerd after you fill out the survey, I will be sending you two extra bonus free comics that we talked about earlier in the show.
And those are not free. And those are not the all ages comics.
Those are absolutely 100% not.
You
all
get
ages.
Edgy stuff.
It's like you're getting
all,
little. You're like getting nudie magazines.
Nudie magazine
day.
Yes, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for doing that for the listener, the Jock and Nerd,
awesome.
And also listener. We're not posting that on social media anywhere. That's right here. You heard it here. That's where you're gonna. The action is gonna be.
Yep.
Basically, for as low as $15, you could get an awesome trade paperback.
Yeah, you're talking 192
pages.
Yeah. Yep, plenty of good stuff there. And then obviously, all the backers, you guys will get all of the updates. Literally, once this Kickstarter is over in August, we will still continue to update people once a week with all of our production notes. And I'll definitely be turning that back to the fans. So if there's anything that you ever want to know about making comic books, you can back us and follow the entire journey until the book's out.
Fantastic. Perfect. That's great. And we'll definitely push it around. Listener, you got till August 31st. These guys need to hit their goal. Get on that shit.
Oh, shit.
So, Anthony, remember after the David Malofsky show, we were chatting, and it came up how, you know, when he sent us the speak pipe, the voicemail of the Jurassic World,
right?
He pretty much said that he was like yelling back at the show,
right?
Like engaging in conversation with us on a podcast, which first of all is amazing. And then he was like, why didn't I just send him this audio comment? And did you say a buddy of yours had a similar thing?
I've had buddies that chimed in and then they're like, wait, I'm talking about podcasts.
I fucking love that. That means we're doing our job. Listener, if you find yourself yelling back at your iPhone because we're just fucking idiots and we don't know what we're talking about,
right,
or if you find yourself chiming into the conversation because you want to add to it because it touches something in you right in the feels.
On the thigh.
Right on, square on the thigh. Here's what you can do. Don't waste that passion. Don't waste that comment. Send us a voicemail. It's really easy. Right in the show notes, there'll be a link. It says send us a voicemail. You can go click that and send a voicemail right from your phone, and we'll get it, and you'll be part of the show. You can also visit speakpipe.com/jockandnerd on your iPad, your phone, your computer, and let us hear from you. I love audio content.
You do?
Yes, I do.
You do.
How else can the people to contact
they
us,
They can
Anthony?
Also email us using their good old fingers, show@jockandnerd.com.
Ooh,
you can also tweet at us.
Use your fingers for that. That's nice.
Yeah.
All right.
You can also tweet at us at jockandnerdcast. Go on facebook.com/jockandnerd. Or you can clamor us. I know Imran fucking pushes clamor all the time.
You know,
it's the greatest app ever.
It's the new tout.
It is. It's the new tout and the old MySpace. I don't know. I haven't made any clamors recently. I got to
get back,
back
on
it's
that
a,
horse.
I think the new thing is Periscope.
Well, we tried that. Zero viewers. No, but you know, nobody listens.
No one's going to watch it live.
Plus, it's live. But the new thing is Periscope. And brands got to figure out creative ways to use it. There is a potential there.
Porn.
porn. All tech starts with porn. I've said this before. I'll say it again. Yeah. All new tech starts with porn. If porn says this is cool, then it fucking blows up that everyone uses it. If porn's not using it, it's not going to go.
It's either porn or the military, right? Where tech starts.
It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of the... I think the military runs the porn industry.
Rest in peace, HD DVD.
Yeah, exactly. Where's your HD DVD now, motherfucker?
Another way you can help the show is by subscribing in iTunes, giving us a nice rating and a good review.
Very important.
If you don't know how, you can visit our website.
Yeah, I have a
click
link.
Click the review,
yeah,
and we have step-by-step directions.
Yeah, very clear. Or if you want to just jump to that, go to jockandnerd.com/review. It'll take you right to our iTunes page. You can subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review, and as always – tell your buddy. Tell your best friend.
Word of mouth.
Do it. Word them up. You give them one of these.
Jock and nerd.
Give them a nice, solid, right? Just walk up to them.
At this point, I think our listener has passed out in their own piss because they're so drunk right now.
I should wake them up. How do I wake them up?
They're so drunk. They've taken so many goddamn shots.
I forgot. I kept making them drink every time I pressed that. Let's give them
Jock and nerd.
There you go.
Take that drink and then just tell a friend.
Yeah.
That's all.
Maybe wake up, be hungover, and tell your friend.
Or just call me. I'll pick you up. Remember, designated driver.
Oh, that's right. The fish will pick you up.
See how we brought that back?
Your friends call you Fish, don't they?
They do.
All right, we'll call you Mark then. That's cool.
Oh,
thanks for listening. We appreciate you hanging out with us. And Mark, we appreciate you coming in to hang out with
us.
Thanks
for having me.
Yes.
You guys, my name's Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
And he's the nerd.
And we'll hear you next time.